Good afternoon and welcome to Witani Childline Radio program, and that is with Helmut, Mikael and Alex joining me in the studio. They are not new, they've been here before, so you know, I'm glad I don't have to, you know, we don't have to do the intro from, you know, from the beginning, man. So let's start with the just very simple acquaintance, you know, before you all dive in and start educating us on to, you know, on today's lesson here on Witani Radio, you know, radio program. So, last week I just had one solo player here, and she did an amazing job. It, she was talking about a healthy living and a good nutrition. That was with Kachana Siseho. And today's discussion is going to be somewhat slightly different, with a different topic, but you know, just trying not to commit murder here. Now, today's topic is child nutrition and healthy living. That is with Alex and Michaela. So, Alex, Michaela, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
And welcome to E11.
Yeah.
So, are you guys ready to educate us?
Yeah, I'm very ready to educate us. Oh. I don't know about Alex. Alex, are you ready?
Yeah, I'm always ready.
Yeah, all right. In that way, then, well, please take it away.
Mm-hmm. Alex?
Good day to all wonderful listeners across Namibia and beyond. A warm welcome to Witani Childline Radio, your trusted program, where we educate, inspire, and empower children, young people, parents, caregivers, and communities. My name is Alex.
I'm Michaela. Thank you so much for tuning in, whether you are listening from home, at school, at work, or on the road. We are delighted to have you with us for one another exciting and educational program. You can start, Alex. Yeah. Start.
The program is proudly brought by you to Witani Childline Radio Station in collaboration with Eagle FM, working together to give every child a voice and to promote child's right, healthy, safety, and well-being through informative and engaging discussions. Your support helps us share important information that empowers children to make healthy choices, stay safe, and build bright futures.
Today's program focuses on child nutrition and healthy living. We'll be discussing the importance of eating a balanced diet, drinking enough clean water, and staying physically active.
Well, as well, we have fun questions, interesting facts, a healthy living challenge, and practice tips that you and your family can use every day.
So grab a healthy snack, pour yourself a glass of clean water, and get comfortable, because today's program is packed with exciting information. Welcome to Witani Childline Radio, proudly in collaboration with Eagle FM. Let's learn, grow, and build healthier lives together. Alex, if you could eat only one healthy food for a whole week, what will it be?
That's a difficult question. I chose mangoes because they are sweet, refreshing, and full of vitamins.
Great choice. I would go with grilled chicken and vegetables because they are delicious and keeps our body strong.
Now it's your turn, listeners. Think about which healthy food you will choose and why. Share your answer with your family or friends after the program. The importance of a balanced diet. Have you ever heard your parents or teachers say, eat your vegetables?
I'm sure we have all heard the question. But it's because our bodies need different nutrients to stay healthy. Eating only sweets, chips, and sugary drinks doesn't give our bodies what they need to grow and stay strong.
A balanced diet means eating different fruits from different food groups every day. Those include fruits, vegetables, grains such as mahangu, maize, meal, and rice. Protein foods like beans, eggs, fish, and chicken. And dry products such as milk and yogurt.
Each food group has special role. Carbohydrates give us energy. Proteins helps our bodies grow and repair healthy. Fats protect our organs and provide energy, while vitamins and minerals help us fight diseases.
Healthy eating also helps us concentrate better at school, give us energy to play, and keeps our body strong. Healthy choice challenge.
Alex, which lunch is healthier?
chips and cool drink.
Lunch A is chips and cool drink. Lunch B is a sandwich, fruit and a bottle of water. But you take chips and cool drink. Alex, if you chose lunch B, you're absolutely right. It's more nutritious and gives your body the fuel it needs.
Did you know your brain needs healthy food to help you think, learn and remember new things? Eating breakfast every morning can help you perform better in school. Here's a quiz time.
Let's see how much you have learned. Question one, which food helps build the muscles? A, a chocolate. B, chicken. C, sweets.
The correct answer is B, chicken.
Question two, which of this is a fruit? A, a carrot. B, apple. C, bread.
The answer is B, apple. Well done.
Mm-hmm. So we can get a jingle from Eagle FM.
All right, here we are going to go for a quick break and then we'll come back again. And if you just tuned in, you have been listening to Itani Childline radio program. And for today, we have Alex and Michaela in studio, and they are educating us on child nutrition and healthy living. Stay tuned while we, you know, and we'll continue on the other side of the break.
Lipura nengelo wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa vera hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu omafelane Eagle FM di ae. Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe kutite opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwala onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune uto otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe fa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumu.
Efaro enene ko ShopRite pamwe no fandifa ilina imonika nale OKG ne ve packaging tumbu ya rumba kanithwa yo real good kodora esero mirongo hetatu no wino sendo mirongo wino woi OKG omlongo do sera woi pungu wa champion kodora esero mirongo ntatu nane no senda o mirongo wino woi no umbisikitu wa bakers yet some more mwami jota oroka mwapatiro ano chokorate kodora mirongo mbali no wino senda o mirongo wino woi kamwe zirikosu wa woi gagoste nuvo kupitha o shiji mwwe faro enene ko ShopRite kakere o tovro kusimdana oshipa mushivu lizepeta ta miliona moku hogorora oka pakete komojira noka karata koma gano goko shuke na ShopRite landa kese shimwe tashkutha ombing tumo no maroka slepa koye ko WhatsApp aitu hogorora oka pakete utaringere ongoye omsindani oko ShopRite akoke
Geshefa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge kwata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa vera hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu omafelane Eagle FM di ae.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Welcome back, and we continue with the Itani Childline radio program. Here in studio with me is Michaela and Alex, and we are just kicking up things a notch from eating healthy to turns out water is just as equally important. But I want to try to be a professional, something that I'm not good. So I'll just I'm not good at. So I'll just pass the ball to the professionals that are here to educate us on this topic. That's Michaela and Alex here at Eagle FM. So the next topic coming up is drinking enough water and staying active. Anyway, so it's Alex and Michaela time. Guys, please take it away.
Welcome back, dear listeners. We have learned about the importance of eating a balanced diet. Now let's talk about another important part of healthy living, drinking enough water and staying active.
That's right, Alex. What Water is one of the most important things our bodies need. Drinking enough clean water helps keep our bodies hydrated, helps us stay focused at school, supports digestion, and keeps our body temperature balanced.
Many children enjoy sugary drinks, but too much sugar is not good for our health. Making water your first choice is a simple and healthy decision.
Staying active is the most important one. Exercise does not always mean going to the gym. You can stay active by playing football, netball, dancing, skipping, rope, walking, cycling, or helping with activities around the home.
Being active helps strengthen our muscles and bones, keeps our hearts healthy, gives us more energy, and helps us feel happier.
So here is our healthy living challenge for this week. Drink enough clean water every day, choose healthy foods, and spend time doing physical activities that you enjoy.
Remember, small healthy choices made every day can help us build a stronger and healthier future.
Can we get another jingle, or are we going to continue with the program?
We can go for a break, and then we'll come back for the what I think is the conclusion.
Yeah.
All right, then we are going to go for a break. You heard that. Don't just eat healthy, but also remember to drink water, you know, stay hydrated. And it turns out, don't be a couch potato.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll continue on that side.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the I.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud. So
not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who doesn't have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Welcome back. We are 21 minutes into the hour of four, and we're still with the Witani Childline radio program here in the studio with me. So, of course, Michaela and Alex educating us on topics of not just healthy eating, but also the need for exercise and drinking water. So they still have a segment left, you know, like the saying goes, save the best for last. So the best, here comes the best for last with Alex and Michaela on Eagle FM.
So we really only have 21 minutes. So we are going out with 21 minutes, so we only have 9 minutes left. So I'm going to tell you guys, as a young child, like growing up, drinking water was not something that is really optional to me. Yes, people were drinking water in my house, but I always try all my best to carry a bottle everywhere I go. Because I've learned that water helps our blood tissues and our blood flow as well, also prevents blood clotting. So when we learn in our Mauritius industries of what we study and all that, in biology I've learned that it helps us stay healthy and helps with the flow of blood in our body. So Alex, maybe you can relate to what you have learned as well.
Yeah, I learned that your body is special and it deserves a good care. Always remember to make healthy choices and encourage those around you to do the same.
So as we come to the end of our today's discussion, we'd hope you have learned that taking care of your health starts with simple actions, eating a balanced diet, drinking enough water, and staying active. So we would like to thank our valued partners and sponsors, UNICEF, Uitani Radio Station, Eagle FM, Lifeline Childline Namibia, Right Start Namibia, and the European Union for supporting this program and helping us share important messages with children and families.
Thank you to all our listeners for joining us today. Keep learning, keep growing, and keep making healthy choices.
And this was Uitani Childline Radio, proudly brought to you by Uitani Radio Station in collaboration with Eagle FM. Stay safe, stay healthy, and goodbye.
So that was it for this week.
Yeah.
Drink water, exercise, eat healthy.
Yeah, stay safe.
Okay, stay safe.
Yeah.
Very important.
Yeah.
But thank you very much, guys, again, for bringing such wonderful topics. And, of course, we're meeting again next week.
Yeah, next week there's other people coming, but we are going to take another. Yeah, it's a different group. All right.
So until next week.
Yeah,
we'll meet time, again. Same place.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
Good day.
Good day.
Lipura nengeno wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo doto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoe ekukulile oshafafana nongeshe faili nehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuala onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa mune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabweli nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye Lipura nengeno wapungwa eva tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite opoe ekukulile oshafafana nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano hile koshuala onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi toda njuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi nawa mune udo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe pa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijabweli nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onore tatuimwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile kongerewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu o mafilane Eagle FM the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom.
Welcome to Home Run. That was a Uitani Childline Lifeline radio program. And now we're coming back to Home Run, where we, you know, where we just do the usual Home Run stuff, where we just, pick a topic and then put all the necessary information together and, you know, throw in a little bit of, you know, sarcasm there, you know, congratulations there, criticisms there, and, you know, from now, obviously, continuing until the hour of 7 with Helmut and Dwight Homran on Eagle FM. So today we're talking about something that is concerns, you know, okay, maybe it's just one of those topics, you know, child protection based, you know, based on, you know, child protection mechanisms, you know, and what basically the Republic of Namibia has been doing, or the mechanisms Namibia has in place in terms of child protection. And this child protection in general, protection, and then, you know, also the promotion of, human rights pertaining to children. But this is a topic that I like to, you know, to look at from a very broad spectrum. Now, this report looks at a time period from 2014 to 2023. But before we come to this report, I would like to share a few things that I just, found in something that I found based, you know, coming from the European Union statistics on human trafficking in general. Because, I'm bringing up now, I know that we're talking about, child protection. Now, I'm bringing up the human trafficking because I'm looking at it from a vulnerability standpoint. So, children are the... I know it's a very major leap one. So
it's a major leap. Now, okay.
So from some reason, my headphones are just about to give me a headache. So I'm looking at it from a vulnerability standpoint.
Yeah.
Every time there's a disaster, you more often hear, even in movies or documentaries, even in real life, it's a women and children first.
Yeah.
And that's because especially when it comes to, especially when it comes to children, you're looking at the vulnerabilities. I mean, take for example, in any danger, in any danger, it's almost, if not just impossible, to expect a kid to defend themselves. So, which is why as a parent at home and overall as a country, so as a nation's leader or as a country, you need mechanisms in place to protect those that cannot protect themselves, and children are at the top of that, of that protection spectrum. Mm. So,
what? Just say it. Just say it.
I've been practicing for Friday, believe me, and it's not easy.
What? Before this report?
I have been practicing since forever. So
yeah, I see the turtleneck is on. Yeah. So you have been practicing.
Yeah, this. Believe me, I have. So first of all, how's the event?
What event? No, I went to go get this thing.
Oh, for accreditation. Yeah, you did patient.
Yeah. So next thing is, it's an AU thing, Amuti, about, where's this thing? Whose label is this? Okay, anyway.
It's under your neck, dude.
Yeah, so this is a special technical committee. You know those STCs? You remember the one on infrastructure and energy?
Uh-huh.
With the Thomas lady that said, don't make the road so obvious from the mine to the port.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems like the AU has multiple of these, just like we would, like we've seen with the standing committees from National Assembly, National Council.
Yeah.
So the AU has similar kinds of structure, but here's the thing: these are special technical committees that come through from the AU Commission. The AU Commission, as you and I know, is where, above them. You remember when you kept me referencing the Council of the Wise? It's a heads of state driven particular scenario. So this is obviously not a Pan-African parliament establishment. So So next week, from Monday to Friday next week, so the special technical committee from the AU on social development, labor and employment will be here in a meeting in Namibia. The key thing is, and in the same time, in the same space, Helmut, the Ministry of Labor is also doing a public consultations on the Labor Act, but it's some sort of piece of legislation that they're doing, which Windhoek once again is somewhere in next week or in August. That Windhoek will also have its own particular special consideration, for stakeholder engagement. I just hope that we are not like what our colleague Anacleta saw in Rundu with the nuclear
with
bill.
The nuclear bill.
Yeah, where people don't show up, where you need to try and understand, you know, what's actually happening here. Now, the bigger concern obviously has been that it's the Employment Services Act that also has its
own, gonna be looking at.
That's currently having its own roadshow of consultations.
Yeah.
Now, it began somewhere in this month.
Yeah.
Don't know how I missed it. But obviously as I've now seen with much of these public stakeholder engagement plannings, they put Windhoek at the end. They put commas at the end. You know, so as to say, let's first reach the outer parts of Namibia.
And then we'll come and conclude everything at home.
Yeah, so commas is in actually September. Yeah, so it was actually in September. But yeah. But there was an earlier notice where they cited like things had already taken place, and I was like, now why didn't I hear about this thing? But yeah, so I don't want to say fun times because they might be, you know, that they might be tedious. It's Helmut and I's job, guys. Guys, you don't know sometimes that the things are superbly boring. I mean, like super. Okay, I not to say that I'm some sort of a, you know, stage performer, but you really have to concentrate. For example, like with the discussion about the responsible gambling. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had to literally wait for the Q&A before I could start like hammering with questions about, listen, are you guys having this discussion to facilitate a law change specifically in what the South Africans have and what we currently have? Are we trying to do what the South Africans have in terms of taking ownership on looking after the consumer and actively playing some sort of a direct regulatory role in terms of saying, if you observe a consumer or a negative social impact, intervene as the business or help with directing to, you know, specialized help for this person who's suffering, obviously, from this particular acute condition. Now, as you and I know, Helmut, with the AU level of things, and I'm pulling us back to the Special Representatives Committee, the conversation we had back in June, the one about where they realized they first need to put the guns down.
Of course.
And stop shooting each other.
Now, imagine a construction site surrounded by explosions.
Imagine a construction site where you've got everybody's weaponized. Well, technically a construction site is in some way weaponized. But
those are tools. Those are construction tools.
It still is.
They're only weapons if you piss the guy operating it off.
I know, but imagine a construction site, and the construction site is an island, ne?
Yeah.
You can't go anywhere else.
Yeah, it's cordoned off.
It's cordoned off.
For safety reasons, yeah.
Yeah. But we mistake the safety reasons and the cordoning off for, we've literally got to fight each other. This is now Hunger Games style situations. Or like when you play your Call of Duty, this is now Gdansk. It's last man standing situations or last team standing. No, that's not what the African continent is supposed to be. It's like the wonderful story I read a little bit earlier in this week. Didn't actually read through it because I could skim through like the first paragraph. The AU is. Not the AU. The EU is sanctioning all illicit gold that is traded out of Sudan.
Yeah.
Because of the UAE.
Yeah.
And the UAE is like one of these funny characters now in the global scheme of things in terms of the just energy transition, the green transition, all these particular things, because the UAE and Qatar guys are now the ones behind rapid investments into oil exploration across the world, which includes Namibia,
yeah,
as well as also now somehow trying to convince countries that are in Africa to literally go against the agreement, the binding agreement, by not having a binding agreement on the ground for the oil and the gas, but literally signing a binding agreement that puts those countries in direct sort of like conflict with the European Union's particular green transition goals. Now, here's the thing, Helmut. You know a lot about bad faith and good faith, specifically from a legal perspective.
Yeah.
And we are seeing a lot of bad faith, good faith happening currently across the world. Now, our listeners were probably asking, Dwight, how did we get to the good faith, bad faith, the African Union and all other stuff if Helmut was still on the topic of
child protection
yeah. and potential human trafficking that usually takes place with children and women? Well, it's primarily because in the global scheme of things, everything is connected. And when it comes to the safety of women and children in a society, usually you've got to look for indicators about how well they're protected and if there are protections that protect them from the get-go.
Yeah.
Because it has also been proven that the same Middle Eastern guys are actually the hubs for women and children trafficking. Those Middle Eastern guys. They are the hubs.
Jeez.
It is through them. With the 2022 World Cup in Qatar,
yeah.
the concerns were what the Arab contractors on the ground, meaning the Qatari citizens, were doing. Agencies would get Filipino, Bangladeshi, Sri Lankan workers, to construction workers, whatever, hospitality services, yeah. all those things there. And then if you come through that agency and you land there in Doha, and you go and report now, say, hey, I'm Dwight. I'm here to report for work. Thank you for flying me all the way. Thank you for sponsoring the ticket. Your passport gets confiscated.
Wait, wasn't that about a year or two ago when it came out in local media that there were Namibians that found themselves stranded in Oman?
Also because of some very obscure recruitment agency promising yeah. jobs and yeah. and potential.
The Omani story yeah. is that like that.
In the Middle East.
Yeah.
There was, at one stage when I worked in the advertising scope of things, there was a South African lady who for years had placed like classified ads about placing you as a Namibian. But here's the thing. You have to pay her to find her your job. So if she doesn't find anything or an employer doesn't want you,
yeah.
you know, you technically lost your money because you're taking a gamble. And
there is no refund.
Yeah, because you're hoping that she gets you a placement. But at that stage, the advertising manager that was my boss, he called the lady directly and he asked her, listen, for how long had you been placing these ads with us?
Yeah.
Because a guy showed up at that media company and he made accusations. Yeah, he's not seeing, you know, return. The promised returns
yeah.
on the $1,000 Namibian dollars that he had paid at the time. So this is 2017, 2018, thereabout.
Yeah.
Just to find out with a phone call, the lady explained, listen, I'm sitting in Cape Town. I don't sit in Windhoek, but the big concern is I have to send CVs, photos of these applicants through to recruiters, meaning the businesses.
Yeah.
In Dubai or in
so that? she's sitting in South Africa, but she's more like running playing the role of a type of a recruitment agency for companies that some are in the Middle
yeah.
East
yeah because okay. they don't have representatives in South Africa or in Southern Africa, and Africans have obviously been seen as this potential avenue as cheap labor in many cases.
Yeah.
But Africans have also been seen primarily as, you know, being able to, if they've got the right qualifications, and this is just a subjective, not an objective statement I'm making,
yeah.
subjective from what I've heard. There are some Africans that technically fit into the ideal job placement roles that they've got there, and some where they go like, okay, you're young enough, we'll put you in hospitality or in a restaurant or yeah. in one of those luxury hotels that side. So, you know, the things were there. But it's just, they take very few, and specifically when it comes to Namibians, very few Namibians have that chance. Now, the lady told literally the boss that I had at the time, I've been doing this for more than 10 years, from the mid-2000s.
Yeah.
To the 20-teens now. So it's more than 10 years that she explained, and she highlighted to the person, listen, the concern is, this is but one guy's concern. Yeah. Now, the dumb side is, you're working in the advertising department. Now, you're trying to kill potential loss of business because this lady had been using your company for more than 10 years.
Yeah.
And she pays for her placements.
Yeah.
And sometimes it runs for a week or multiple weeks and multiple months. Yeah, I mean, a classified Hamoud at that stage is less than $2,000 that you would place, depending on the kind of styling that you would use and the edit and how you position your message and the editing that's applied. But in many cases, a $2,000 does the job to place an ad for the whole month. Versus now placing a full body ad is what it used to be called, you know, the large ads throughout the rest of the newspaper. The downside was the journalist who the guy complained to took just that guy's statement, went wild, primarily because it was put in a way of, unfortunately, like this business is somehow scamming this one guy.
Yeah.
But the failure was also in the correspondence because he could show that there was correspondence between him and the lady. And the lady responded correspondence. And she told him, listen, this is, if they like your CV, then they like your CV.
So it's not a guarantee. So you should know that.
Yeah. But you still have to pay her for her time and effort and services for doing the work for you from South Africa.
Yeah.
Because you're the Namibian, you don't have those contacts. She has those contacts.
Yeah.
If you knew what the contacts were, you would never have worked through that particular avenue.
Yeah.
But because you're not the one in the pound seats in terms of the context, unfortunately, you got to work through her. And it's very convenient. It's being used through one of Namibia's largest, companies that have a very large footprint.
Yeah.
Straightforward. I mean, it's a win-win if you're the job applicant looking for such employment. It's a win for you.
You don't have to deal with the logistics of...
Exactly. You're not the one who has to make contact. Go on websites that are obscure. You don't know if the thing is trusted. Just to find out your identity is stolen. And then there's a Helmut Mahongo on the other side. Then the EU... not in the EU, in the UAE walking around there. But situations like this happen.
Yeah.
So, bringing you back. That was a safe avenue, what that lady did.
Yeah.
That was a safe avenue.
So this type of recruitment style where you have where someone basically decides to run a recruitment agency, like we have the local ones that are operating here where you can just hand your documents and then they do the hunting from one entity to another trying to see if if there's a company that has a vacancy somewhere where someone of your qualifications is needed.
Yeah,
but I think part of the problem is just like any industry, there are players that they are malign, like fake players that are basically using that avenue to sort of like not just scam, but also you can just talk about human trafficking. Yeah. Remember when we talked about the pig butchering, discussion?
The pig butchering scam.
Where people, especially one guy from India, was contacted and he was told, he was contacted with a job offer. Somewhere in the IT line of work.
Yeah.
Now, when he got to parts of Cambodia.
Yeah.
So when he got there, then he realized that, this was actually, he had just walked into a trap. So you basically walk into a kidnapping type of situation where you are literally beaten to reach, scamming quarters.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have these things going. So when you have players like the lady that you just pointed out, she's been doing that for a decade. Yeah. It's over a decade now, if she's still doing it.
Yeah, if she's still doing it.
Yeah, if she's still doing, then she's been doing it for over a decade.
I don't buy that outlet anymore.
I think the most scary part is every time a legit way of helping people comes up, someone duplicates an evil an evil way out of that.
Yeah.
Take AI for example. Just had to learn, I think that was earlier this year, that There are large language models that are being developed that you mostly find on the dark web.
Yeah.
Now, these are just the, you know, these aren't your ordinary chat GPT. Think about, you know, think of, you know, large language, you know, language models like AI models like your DeepSeek, your chat GPT, except, you know, except without all the guardrails.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can just use that thing to, you know, to vibe code all kinds of softwares to cause all kind of damage. So the AI itself is very positive when you are using it correctly. Now, this is the one that is mostly made for consumer.
Emphasis
on correctly. Now, the models that are made for just a regular consumer, if you are using it, you know, correctly, you know, they're very helpful.
Yeah.
But, you know, the versions that you find on a place like the dark web, for example, you can imagine what they're built for. If you look at, you know, remember the Silk Road? That also came out of the, you know, I think the Silk Road story on how, you know, one person made billions from selling drugs through the dark web.
Yeah.
That is one of those stories that basically indicates about, you know, a very interesting part of human nature of what we do with the power we have when it's unregulated. A lot of people gravitate towards the dark web because of its privacy. Compared to your surface, internet, like your ordinary browsers, like your Chrome, for example. Yeah.
Do you know how scary that thing is?
Look, I know, but, you know, a lot of proponents that I have ran into that, that like to use Tor, because Tor takes you, you know, it's one of those easy access to the dark web.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, a lot of people would, that are proponents of Tor, basically the whole idea behind Tor is security and privacy. But we all know that that security and privacy is being used to do all kinds of evil things.
Do you know what is the one? There's one video on YouTube where the guy explained, you think these VPNs and these browsers Tor them are hiding your presence on the dark web. He said it's the biggest. It's the biggest misunderstanding. The worst case is it's like you opening the door, but you can't see everyone else. They are all invisible to you, but they can all see you.
That's the thing.
You're the only guy who's visible. You're the only guy who's visible. And the worst part is when you open that door, everybody sees you.
You see, I think that's where these are places where I think you need the right tech expertise to be. Yeah. You don't just show up because that would be like you showing up on an oil rig. You don't even know where the bathroom is.
or you show up as a surfer at Hawaii to try and surf the biggest waves that are found in Hawaii.
Yeah, like,
or you show up at what's the other surfer spot here in South Africa, Jeffreys Bay.
Yeah.
Sometimes where the sharks are also, and you don't you think sharks are friendly friendly sea creatures. Just for you to go and swim there.
Yeah, you're going to be lunch. But look, the thing is, one thing that, I've watched a bunch of videos on this, and one thing that a lot of, tech experts that I have watched, especially when it comes to privacy online, is that there is no such thing as 100% online.
Mm.
Yeah, you can use you can run Linux on your well-customized hardware, And you are doing all this, all these right things. But the thing is, it's the internet.
Yeah.
Yeah. So 100% security is not a guarantee. It's, it's the same thing that,
There is.
100%. If you can go to the Amazon.
You switch off the machine.
Switch off how?
You switch off. Cut the power. Pull the plug. You switch off.
Then
you are safe.
No, when you are using it, there is no such thing as
one. No, but that's the thing, Hamoud. It's basically to tell the human, switch off the thing if you want security.
And you know how modern cell phones and computers are made? Everything is welded shut together. So you
just press the off button, Hamoud. That's a good
press the off button.
You want to destroy stuff. Just press the off button.
And are you sure your phone is off at this point?
No, not the phone. I'm talking about the PC, man.
Coming in with a built-in battery now that you can't remove.
No, your PC comes with it's a standing PC. Not this one. It's a standing computer.
Yeah, I'm talking about your laptop.
No,
laptop. You're just cooked.
A laptop is the same thing as these phones. I mean, the hackers can switch the thing on without you thinking or knowing.
Yeah. Now, I mean, that explains why you have a bunch of countries, most of them basically, at least that I know of, that have implemented the child safety mechanism of, you know, of having this social media age limit of some sort. I mean, we saw Australia doing that. And I believe a few months ago it was the Spanish, and just a few days ago it was the French.
Yeah.
And I can't find a picture of where this is taking place in the developing world, especially in Africa. Like, are we having this discussion over why, you know, every country seems to be taking this precaution over having an age limit over the use of social media? Or are we just going, you know what, I'm busy here, I'm working, you know, for you not to disturb me, I'll just give you social media so you can, you know, go and play.
And the funny thing is, Almudna, it's from social media.
Yeah.
It's not from the internet.
Yeah. Yeah, it's from social media.
It's from
can use browsers and all that, but it's just your meta apps and all this.
Yeah, it's social media, it's not the internet.
Yeah.
Now, the funny thing is, to factor into your explainer there, China 2 years back brought out a specific policy. Actually, there's a whole bunch of funny things that have been happening that have been misquoted and misdescribed, or potentially deliberately, the actual description has been deviated from. So, Helmut, I came across something that, for example, in the context of the broader scheme of things, in terms of just, you know, living a decent life.
Mm-hmm.
Xi Jinping, back in 2016, gave a famous speech at the CCP's, central meeting time frame that happens here, I think in May or in June. And he made a famous statement there by saying, homes are meant for living in, homes are not meant for speculating.
What does that mean?
From there, the Chinese government has deliberately installed policy, not law, that stipulates a home, the property market, the housing market, is for a real need. The housing market is not for an imagined asset hoarding activity.
Yeah, that's the entire West and Western economic and model
and also
influenced countries like here, also Namibia. Yeah.
But from Namibia, you just drive south that way, it's a completely different scenario. North that way, completely different scenario. East that way, it's only in two regions that it exists. Then I'm getting into like the internet discussion. 2 years back, that was just like from COVID heading to 2023, there was like, you know, for example, that game that you play, Call of Duty.
Yeah.
Many of the Western and American and European gamers complained about the level of cheating that Asian gamers use.
Yeah.
Meaning the way that the movements of their character is just unnatural. You can
see. Yeah, I mean, you're being shot through a wall.
Which is usually known as...
wall banging.
No, it's another name.
Wall hacking?
Yeah, wall hacking. Yeah. They call it wall hacking. Or the other one in terms of the... You know, where the guy shoots you from the other side of the map. He never saw you.
No, that's in BR. I mean, just picture it this way. Picture Namibia as a map in your game.
Mm.
So, I land in Commerce. You land in, in Erongo, and you're shooting me. Oh, come on, see. How good of a sniper are you?
You're standing on the Erongo Mountains. And you have no sight because in reality, human potentially can only see up to like, or can have like actual sight of something potentially 5 kilometers away. I don't know how accurate that is because that's 5,000 meters away. I was told this by a person who was a former pilot.
Yeah.
I frowned because we were sitting at the beach there, I tried to look with my spectacles on. Can I see 5 kilometers from here? I mean,
whatever you're looking at, especially, you know, if it's big enough, it's most likely going to look like full stop.
Or it's a question also of elevation. How high must I be to have a good view? Because if I'm on ground level, I'm just going to see what's in front of me. And you and I know in countries like Namibia, where the heat plays funny, you know, the mirages,
yeah,
they play those funny tricks on your eyes.
Yeah.
because it's technically the heat that's creating that those reflectors.
I think there's water somewhere.
Yeah. So what 5 kilometers are we talking about here? Anyway,
yeah.
I'm digressing. Now the scenario from that was just to show you that they realized in China that just after COVID, up until 2023, that the youth were playing too much video games and they were too long for extended times, too long on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
China brings out an internet usage law. If you're in certain age brackets, you can only access the internet between certain periods of the day.
Mm-hmm.
I will tell you today, if I go home after the show and I go switch on PUBG, there's a time where the servers literally connected to each other. And that only happens between 9 a.m. in the morning and like 12 midday for that 3-hour period.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be bumping into a heck of a lot of Chinese gamers who are just superbly good. And you'll even be questioning the level of reflexes. And then suddenly after that, you don't see them again. Now, that obviously shows the time frames that they're allowed to be on the internet, which is actually in play. Now, here's where something important comes through. This report, Helmut, of child protection and, what's the other word? Child protection and care? What? Child protection and, what's this report's name, Thomas?
Child protection. You got the child care and protection. Yes, sir.
Yeah, child care and protection report. This report speaks to physical events.
Yeah.
The minister, Minister Kantema, she was earlier this, back in last month, she was in another particular platform somewhere, talking about, obviously, child protection and the welfare of Namibian children.
Yeah.
But she went and spoke there about, the gaps that still exist in them, like in Namibia's, mitigation strategies, meaning our ability to respond to an event, which is online bullying, the threats that exist with the internet, for example, those other activities, which includes also the pedophile guys and child trafficking syndicates, which usually would be found, like most of them have been found on social media platforms, so on and so on. They cite here one of the challenges. Now, I had to read this report from back to front, and the concern here is that the data side of this report, which is chapter 3, shows you services that these vulnerable children accessed.
Yeah.
Chapter 4, which is about the challenges, issues, and potential recommendations, starts off firstly, lack of technological infrastructure. Back in chapter 2, when the actual reporting began, I sat there looking at some of the data points from the 2014 to the 2024 realm. 2023 or 2024? It ran almost for 10 years, basically. 2023.
It ran from 2014 to 2023.
Yeah. The major talking point there was every year they had a statistical indicator of children that access these services. But the question that was never answered at the end of that report was whether or not these were new kids that needed assistance. Mm-hmm. Or is it the same number of kids that are in the system? That's all it says. You don't know if it's new kids being enrolled into systems, or is it the same children with the deviations that some of them leave?
And then some of them coming.
Or some of the new ones coming. What is the picture? So the wording technically says, it just says 2014. X amount of kids were accessing these services that were counted in across the regions across the Namibia.
Yeah.
And so it goes, that's all it says. It doesn't say if it's new, doesn't say if there was this existing population number, new ones, and some of the kids who from the previous year did not return or, success conclusions in terms of rehabilitating them and helping them find stable families and stuff like that. That is one of the things. Now, this report, guys, is limited in its own scope because the ministry limits it. They know where they're limiting it. So we don't even see potentially like full into any violence against these kids. Even though they're given a glossary there, potentially what qualifies as harmful or violence against the child, and an adolescent, they give descriptions there. But that's also not the picture you see. The picture we are just seeing is what the country has collected, how many of these kids exist, how many of these programs have these kids been entered into or participated in, and what are the services that are currently there. That's all we are seeing.
Yeah.
So it's pretty, you can basically see it's pretty limiting and just saying, we don't want to say X kids probably disappeared because of some sort of negative thing happened. Or we don't want to say that some of these kids come out of such severe, traumatizing environments. This is the condition that they were assessed under. No. It just stays there.
I think it focuses more on the mechanisms.
Yeah.
Yeah, the mechanisms in place in terms of shielding, kids that call it in need, especially socially.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think the emphasis in the whole report is put more on obviously the institutions we have in place and how they've been operating in terms of housing these individuals. But looking at which is actually what I expected, I'm more like not expected, it's something that I thought the report is about. Which is okay. Maybe there's you have this categorization of okay. This is first of all, this is how many kids this is how many kids that's been reported in total, and then you divide them in the ills that they suffered and the and how to combat those ills.
Yeah.
But the focus is I think it's very look. I actually started describing as a very PG rated type of report. They're just looking at these are the it's like in a way they're just the government showing off that we have these mechanisms in place to
that's all this report is doing. Not that I was looking for the gory stuff.
Me neither.
But it would have been nice to see to what extent they are reporting on and what are they encompassing in this report. So yeah, Helmut, you were still saying.
And it took me back to the, you remember the encounter between that, between the minister of, the former minister of finance, Ipumbu Shimi, and this lady from,
the ladies from that.
Yeah, from one, is it
was a domestic violence NGO.
An NGO who asked the minister of finance about, all these shelters that are supposed to house those that are fleeing from, domestic violence, domestic violence, be it, women that are running out from abusive spouse or, and children.
Mm.
She did mention that, a bunch of them was that 2023 or 2024. A bunch of them did not operate pretty much for the entire year, and they suspected that had to do with the financial problems.
Yeah.
So the question then to the minister was why were they, is this not a priority type of question that she asked? So that's when Ipumbu Shimi obviously, said, okay, now that is not the mandate of the Minister of Finance, unfortunately. Mm. Yeah, but the good thing is he was, he was kind enough to be, helpful in sort of like helping her get the answers that she wants. Like, I can't answer your question directly, but I can link you with either the Ministry of Home Affairs if it's a safety and security question, or the Ministry of Gender if you are looking at answering it from, looking at it like there are any victims that need help that needs help. Yeah, but more often the two are going to show up. Yeah. So because you have the safety and security guys, the ones that will obviously provide the security component. And you have mostly the administration and the feeding and housing and cancellation, all those, most of that is going to come from Minister of Home Affairs. not ministry, not minister of gender, but now, the more you, the deeper you look at it from from the victims and the cruelties they suffer, mm-hmm. then you see also another ministry coming in terms of the expertise that are needed, like your ministry of health now, for example, now comes in.
Because
if someone has suffered physical abuse, including sexual assault, you need the ministry of health to pop in there. So the coordination in the institution is something that I think is amazing when you look at it from the report standpoint. But if you are looking for the statistics of what crimes are more prevalent in relation to child abuse,
yeah,
they are it's
a report on itself.
That's a whole report
that's
on itself.
That's an entire,
and I don't think I even want to read that one because what people are.
Do you know who I actually feel sorry for, Helmut, in this broader scheme of thing? When we look at reports like this, you and I.
Yeah.
Every time I think about the police officers, first respondents, officers,
yeah.
Ambulance staff, and let's for example even say like the social worker. But so the social worker is like
your emergency also, guy.
Yeah, but the social workers in some cases also like after the matter of the fact, you know, they get the the client or slash the patient, the victim,
yeah.
gets referred to them like after the person is being stabilized in one or other format, whether it's psychological or physical stabilization, you know, whether it's a mental wound or an emotional wound or an actual wound,
mm-hmm.
it's after the stabilization of whatever was at fault there. Now, the social worker has to now work with someone who has had to work with multiple people.
Yeah,
in the system.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing that it's spread across stages.
Yes and no. The weird thing is, in the, let me call it the human animal kingdom,
mm-hmm.
not human with animals animal kingdom, the human who's the animal in yeah. this kingdom, in the human animal kingdom, Helmut. We have trust issues, big trust issues.
Yeah.
Now, specifically, if you're someone like a vulnerable child, if you're someone like, let's for example say, a woman who is also traumatized a lot in terms of, let's say, very abusive partners, XYZ, and so on,
yeah.
or just any person in general who ultimately suffers, in a very abusive situation or scenario, predominantly at a domestic home level, it's very difficult for those people to trust other people.
Yeah.
Specifically, if it's people from the
public. So, because of the trauma.
Because of the trauma.
Yeah.
Specifically, if it's from a police officer that has to help you in terms of response. And how many times have the police officers themselves have said, listen, like with the SGBV protests of 2020, the cases get registered, and just before the police have to lock the guy up, or if they've locked the guy up who's yeah. the abusive partner,
yeah.
then the case gets withdrawn by the victim.
I think, that's something that was pointed out last year, if I remember that correctly, from a lot of videos of the Women's Conference. And a lot of those, I think you can still find a lot of those videos. I mean, it went pretty viral.
Yeah.
Where I like how, the ladies basically came together and they were very frank with each other. When I tell you, they were brutally honest. And, they were members of the security class. You'll find videos of a lot of, police officers also at this event. And, one lady pointed out that one of the biggest problems that we're dealing with here is that you come and file a case of abuse, but before we actually try to figure out what's going on in this case, you come and withdraw the case. Now, the thing is, that's
just
your right.
Guy,
we can't deny.
Just because the guy, the abuser, profusely yeah. apologized at home.
I was drunk.
I really love you. I really. Yeah, people go read up about narcissists. Especially that one, the violent one. Go read up on them. Actually, there is a psychologist on YouTube. Her name is Dr. Ramani. The woman says, Hamut, and this doctor, she's like the foremost narcissist researcher mm-hmm. and psychologist.
Yeah.
She literally said in one of the videos, she says, I have narcissists in my family. I was married to one.
Oh,
I know them all.
So it's not just school experience in terms of dealing with Nazis, but you married one.
But here's the thing, Hamoud. If you don't, if people have not never realized what the human
psychology,
not psychology, the other word to be more specific,
human psyche,
your character,
yeah,
who you are. There are two levels of identity.
Yeah,
but a psychologist looks at the identity of the person in your brain, in the mind. They don't look at the person with the face sitting in front of you.
Yeah,
because they have to get into your mind.
Yeah, that one is more of a, you know, well glued together caricature that you basically present into the outside world.
Yeah, if you want to use that euphemistic template, Helmut, because if you've watched, okay, I know that fictional things on should not be of any application to like real life scenarios, but if you've watched the TV show, the one I almost said Red Dragon. Is it Red Dragon? No, Red Dragon is the movie. The TV show that starred the guy that, Mads Mikkelsen, the Swedish actor, or the Danish actor, alongside the other British actor. But Mads literally played the serial killer in the show.
Oh.
And do you know who his prey was?
Who is that?
His own patients. His own patients.
I've watched a bunch of documentaries, so you know, on doctors becoming serial killers. One of the most one scary thing.
Yes, it is. It's a truly scary thing. An educated, trained person.
Yeah.
Turning out that way. Yeah. Now here's the weird. Here's the funny comedic side of things.
Yeah.
The FBI has to bring in another psychologist who was on the level of also becoming a serial killer. To hunt an actual serial killer, because this psychologist was sort of like his research and his works are at the forefront of understanding what makes a killer. Now, obviously, if you don't read like the court papers, like in Namibia, you will never understand what is in the human psyche of the individual that the courts have to deal with. The courts and those lawyers. But remember, I'm explaining a process, the courts, when the person has been caught.
Yeah.
So we will never, for example, see scenarios of like true understanding. One of the psychologists here in Namibia bringing out an actual book to say the various kinds of personalities that are rampant in Namibia that are prevalent in Namibia. Sorry for using the word rampant, but yeah, that are prevalent. Now, in the Ramani's case, this is a real life psychologist who literally has her own YouTube channel, and she had to explain, because I couldn't understand for a long time why I kept seeing Ramani popping up on my YouTube feed. I'm like, but I'm not the one looking up on narcissists and on psychopaths, the differences between the two. There's also a difference between the two, but they are very, sometimes they're the same kind of personality, Hamoud, but it depends. Narcissists, they have a scenario where they need the attention. They need the attention all the time. Now, you can get narcissists in various formats. Mm-hmm. There's not one size that now... It's the same with the psychopaths.
Yeah. It's not one size fits all type of criteria.
Yeah. For example, like, I had to read up on one bad habit that I have. I sometimes talk to myself, like, when I'm alone at home.
It's funny how you think it's just you.
No. It's not... I think I'm the only person. I thought it wasn't a bad habit, that it was, you know, something that I obviously developed, which probably mightly, but it is an indicator of people that are insane. People who talk to themselves are literally, this is what American psychologists and European psychologists have identified. It's like the early parts of people who are, you know.
Going cuckoo?
Oh man! So yeah, just to let you guys know. And the unfortunate thing is, I developed this thing at a very young age.
Yeah.
By talking about myself, like at a very young age, like at 11 or 12. So it's deemed as problematic. So I just have to unfortunately cope and deal with this thing and find a way of suppressing this negative trait. But here's the thing. Psychopaths, sociopaths, narcissists, they are different hats of different personalities. Now, the report doesn't get into anything psychological. Just so that you guys know.
They're more like on a national way. This is,
what we're dealing. A stocktaking of what the ministry does.
Yeah.
Who the ministry helped.
Yeah.
How the ministry did this.
In between, from 2014 to 2024.
So that report that Helmut and I are now describing of victims, what happened to these kids, how did they end up in adoption setups or in having to be transferred from biological parents to foster parents or to guardians that are thus empowered by a court order. Those scenarios would have been literally close to the report that we did end of last year, Helmut, the one about the domestic violence report.
Mm-hmm.
The one that came from the One Economy Foundation. Remember that report?
Yeah.
It would have been something on that level.
Yeah.
Talking to perpetrators and victims. But predominantly, you would just need to get from a victim.
Yeah, but exactly.
And the police.
Yeah, the domestic violence report that we looked at.
Yeah.
One thing that it outlined was that...
and that was just domestic violence. Right?
And here's the thing.
Yeah.
The violence, it's a domestic violence report, but it's a very, it's a very disturbing report when you look at it, that it's not done by a total stranger. All the ills that are reported, that are in the report are done by the people closest to the victim.
No. The person who wrote it is, I think, two or three psychologists, because the lead psychologist was the one, that works with the One Economy Foundation under the former First lady.
Yeah.
But they had to go and talk to the perpetrators and the victims.
Yeah.
And then the police and then social workers.
Yeah.
So you could see how the line of questioning and research went. Now, I'm not saying it would have been nice if this report that we're sitting with by the Ministry of Gender also had a dimension in terms of understanding, okay, what happened? What was the prevalent, most prevalent circumstance or condition that these children became vulnerable?
Yeah.
Why were they confiscated from their biological parents? Why did the state have to intervene? These are questions Helmut and I are sitting with.
Yeah. Here. So you're looking at the cause of the problem.
Yeah, we're looking at the cause, because it's not just good for us Namibians to hear that. For example, when you get into chapter 2. Let me quickly just get into that chapter. If you get into chapter 2, or should I just stay here in chapter 3, which has all these data entries under the various conditions and the services that they bring forward. Just quickly getting there to the start of this chapter.
Okay. While you're getting there, I want to point out something that they, that I found fascinating in this report. And that's they're basically defining they're defining what is meant by call it child abuse, I guess. Violence against children. Violence against children. On page 26, violence against children means acts relating to physical, sexual, or psychological violence or abuse. Or neglect or exploitation of a child. So it's it's one heck of a list that you're looking at there. So all of which are very obvious when you look at human behavior.
Yeah.
From a psychological standpoint, on the basic level, you don't have to be an expert to know that neglecting your own child is just not something that a reasonable parent should do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Reasonable is a very long word. Do you know why I say be reasonable?
What?
Because you do know what happens within business law and or in the contract.
Don't go technical on me now.
No, because there was an explanation given in that commercial law subject of mine once where it was looking at latent and patent defects.
Yeah.
And I can't remember which one of the two it was, but a judge, once again, the case law that they cited was a South African case. It was about food stewards. Because food stewards is also one of those sale conditions.
Why does that word sound familiar?
Food stewards is selling as is.
Yeah.
Selling the product as is. But this is usually for secondhand or used products. So the case law that was cited was that In many cases, some people believe just because you're selling something, foodstuffs, doesn't mean there's potentially any kind of consequences that you as the seller would not be liable for.
Yeah, in terms of a duty of care.
Yeah. For example, you should be able to bring to the fore any potential sort of like negative elements or what needs to be fixed elements to the potential buyer. So the buyer so
disclose all the defects.
Yeah, the buyer needs to be aware.
Yeah.
So what happened was a case of a chassis of a car way back then in South Africa in the 1930s. Chassis was rusted, and when the person had bought the car, the chassis broke like this, middle in the half, at the rusted point, at the weakest point of the rust. Yeah. And obviously, the one party tried suing the other party, and then the judge ruled in favor of the seller by saying, but then a reasonable person would have inspected the essential parts of the car if you were engaging in a contract of purchase and sale, which is a contract of a contract dictated by the principle of voodstuffs, meaning selling as is, as it stands. You would have done your inspection good enough as a reasonable person, which implies you must be of a certain mental state.
Yeah. That's one of the essentials of contract law.
Yeah.
You can't get into any legally binding agreement with someone that has five shots of tequila,
or someone that is literally declared by the state as being mentally unsound.
And you can, or a minor.
Yeah, or and even if the person didn't even get. Even if the person is a 16-year, even if the person is a 19-year-old above a 16-year-old, but the person is not 21-year-old, the Namibian contract law doesn't recognize someone below 21 as being emancipated to make decisions for themselves.
Yeah, depending on the contract, you may want to find out what are the age restrictions with regards to the agreement you're about to make. Otherwise, you're going to get up in some hot soup.
And that would be both parties, no?
Yeah. There are certain things that I'm looking at here because I'm pointing this out because if you look at it, you have physical violence. That's one, which is why we don't have corporal punishment because that.
Yeah, I've got a good story for you about that.
I have stories, plural.
No, mine comes from an education perspective. Your old, your old stomping ground.
serious? Anyway, so you have physical violence. This one is going to be up for, this becomes a very interesting discussion because, how about this? A reprimanding mechanism that is very standard to a lot of cultures, it's marks for a thin line in between disciplining someone and basically physical violence to the, as it's defined today.
Actually, Hamid, this segment of physical violence actually explains, but it's only contained to this segment. It actually explains under the conditions that these children, what happened to them.
Yeah.
But it's only under this program.
Yeah.
But yeah, you were saying.
Now, the only ones that, the thing is, sexual violence in this case is also, can also fall in the category of physical violence.
Mm.
Yeah. Now you have psychological is psychological is in all of them. Neglect causes psychological harm. Physical violence, as in corporal punishment, causes psychological harm. Sexual assault causes psychological harm. So the main damage here is that's being caused by all three aspects of of violence against children or basically against anyone. If you look at it, it's the psychological because whichever they are exposed to, there is an exponential degree of psychological harm being caused to the victim.
Yeah.
So then they looked at the objective of the program now to prevent gender-based violence, and which is also pointed out here, gender-based violence and violence against children, and to protect children and adults who are victims. And this is why I pointed out earlier that the report is very institutional oriented in terms of how they deal with with all these societal ills that are found in Namibia, whether it's pertaining to women, as in reference to gender-based violence or violence against children, which is basically like the report is centered on. The reason why I said it's physical violence is an interesting aspect to have is because of the whole corporal punishment discussion.
Mm.
And then you say there's a story. I'm assuming that story is in relation to my old profession.
Yeah, it happened literally in 1998.
Ooh.
When I started my first year in high school, grade 8.
Yeah.
So the story pops up at that stage. President Nyoma hated corporal punishment.
Yeah.
Because he is on multiple occasions on record for saying he hates violence in schools, and specifically by teachers on school, on school kids. Whether you're an adolescent, a teenager on high school, or whether you're a kid in primary school, the president just didn't like the presence of violence. And in some cases, Helmut, if you think about, for example, the kinds of teachers that you would have had, like I always sat and every day how, I would sometimes blame like the grade 3 teacher I had at the time. Won't mention names. Her daughters might be listening. But she was the reason why I'm not good with division. Division, bruh. Division. Just
basic. Long division or just basic
long,
division?
Long. The one that you had to put up the little stand.
Yeah. You have a little arch and then it goes vertically.
Yeah. Long division.
Yeah.
She's the reason. She is literally the reason. And you know what?
Yeah.
When you look at YouTube videos from mathematicians from India, from China.
Oh, it's simplified.
It's
like
super simple.
Super simplified. Yeah, I watch all those. I watch those videos all the time. I'm watching this guy explaining, explaining exponents and logs, and it's so simplified. I'm like, okay.
Now what did my teacher do in class?
Really?
Why did he show up if he was whoever made him angry at home? Why did you come to class with that mentality and that behavior? But then every time
you made him angry at home, seriously, dude.
I know that was the.
You guys were just the exits.
You know, when you think about things like in your life, you get like at 15, you think about, man, why was that lady like that? Or why was that guy like that? There was a geography teacher at the same primary school I had, where a girl in my class told him, "Sir, I want to be a teacher just like you." He turns around with the most sarcastic expression in life, now that I think about it. And he says, "Do you have hair on your teeth?" And you could see her face contort like this. But before then, ad break.
Okay, my turn. Hold on. Just let me finish my story. As I was saying, my man, you've been finishing your story for 10 minutes now. Even my tassies is getting warm. Just give more eyes. Anyways, long story short.
Oh, hi. When you're talking, it's a short story long.
Short stories turn long. Go best together with Tassenberg. Not for persons under the age of 18. Enjoy responsibly.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
We are 30 minutes into the hour of 5. You're still listening to Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on Eagle FM. We are talking about our child protection starts coming out of the Ministry of Gender and Child Welfare from 2014 to 2024. And, it's an interesting report from an institutional standpoint with regards to what the government is doing combating all this kind of, all this kind of societal ills, and most importantly, helping the victims.
Yeah.
Now, so long division.
Yeah. So by the age of 15, when I got into high school, I would sit there thinking to myself, you know, how could one teacher spoil one part of a subject for you? I can do the multiplication, the addition, the subtraction.
Yeah.
When it comes to fractions and algebra, a completely different thing from just basic long division. But if you now had to ask the person, go and do long division for me.
Yeah.
I would just end at a certain point, because then mental block gets in and I can't go further. Here's the big concern. The things that I saw was, for example, the day that we were taught long division.
Mm-hmm.
One of the classmates, she was a very short girl. She was a bit this tiny because all her family members were pretty short people. So you can clearly see sometimes, you know, no.
Genetic predisposition.
Yeah, no, you know, teasing intended. And she had to stand on a chair because she was so short. Now, the teacher wrote down the problems, like from top to bottom, and then she was first up.
Mm-hmm.
But because we knew who this teacher was in grade 3, you could already see, oh my goodness,
this is not going to end well.
It's either the first person gets it or the rest of us gets it as well. And I'm talking about the first person becomes the example for us, or we all become the example, the negative example. So what happened? She got up. This classmate of mine, she's now a teacher. I just don't know where she is, like in Namibia,
mm-hmm.
but she's now a teacher, last time I saw. And she starts, but as your kid, you're nervous.
Yeah.
And she just stops there. And then now she's a girl. Now girls, obviously, your lower legs are exposed because of the dress, the school dress you're wearing. The teacher stands with a ruler, bruh. That plastic ruler for a 9-year-old is painful. Hits her on the calves. Yeah. The calves here.
Yeah.
And on this part of your skin here, from your the joint of your knee, but the backside on your calf.
Yeah.
Is very sensitive skin versus the skin on the front side.
Yeah.
Yo, bruh. I stood there. You'd be sitting there as a 9-year-old going like, what is going on here?
Bro came to work pissed or something.
No, it's a she.
Oh, okay, that's worse.
Same scenario happened to my younger brother. 3 years later, different teacher, same school. My mom intervened. Because my mom felt like the woman had an agenda against my younger brother. That was a good thing. Which technically shows you I did not so a good job myself on myself
mm-hmm.
in terms of seeking help from my adult, my mom.
So your brother, you were just keeping it to yourself, and your brother was like, I'm telling.
Yeah, but there were certain obvious signs on my brother's case.
Yeah.
Because the trimester reports just looked odd for my mom versus for Dwight, obviously 3 years earlier. So my mom intervened. And because my mom's cousin... the guy, he was technically also at one stage a local counselor there later on after he retired, but he was the principal at that stage of the primary school. And my mom went and asked him, listen, what's up with my son's marks? And then when my mom encountered the teacher, she realized the teacher has issues. And this teacher was literally taking it out on the kid,
which
was my younger brother.
So the teacher was dealing with their own psychological problems.
Yeah, but it manifests at the workplace on your child.
That's the thing. It's going to exit somehow, which is why I came across a video of one guy explained something similar to that, but with regards to to public roads.
Yeah.
That if someone cuts you off in traffic, be the adult.
Just let it go.
Yeah, just let it go. Yeah. Because if you start, you have no idea what they are going on, what they are going through in their private life. Chances are very high they are bottling in so much that it's now beginning to come out as somewhat of like inappropriate behavior.
Oh, it might manifest in road rage.
In road rage. And someone like that, when you stop them, the problem is you can't reason with them because they're already pissed.
Yeah.
They are just looking for an excuse to let it all out, which is why they're terrible listeners.
Yeah.
You can't explain your way through to them because they're never going to listen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, it's been one hectic day and you're on a way home and someone starts, driving like in a weird way, and I'm with the guy. Because more often when we think that someone is mad at us, I mean, take for example the question you just asked a very simple question, okay, why did you do this?
Mm.
And then he's going on a rant explaining all kinds of things. Then you know that it's not about you.
Mm.
Yeah,
you are never the
you are not the cause.
At that moment, you are probably at the wrong time in the wrong place. Yeah,
actually, you are the exit.
Yeah, you are the exit.
Yeah.
Which was obviously why I thought that at 15 years old, when you look back on the attitude of teachers and you think back in, for example, why President Nyoma was so
adamant about her.
Not adamant, Helmut. President Nyoma hated it. He technically hated it.
Yeah.
If you go look up the historical articles that were written by the media at that stage, the man hated it. He hated,
corporal punishment
in schools. Now, this could technically also mean he was probably also someone that saw this firsthand as a kid as well, or potentially, or experienced it. Because you would only have someone that would be adamant about removing something that saw it as a negative impact if you potentially were also a victim similarly of such behavior. Another scenario was also and this is where I always hate, like, school mentality. For example, like, we're supposed to be in a team. But because of one bad apple, the whole team gets punished. Yo, I hated it. I hated it since primary school. I hated it in sports settings. I hated it. You know, punish me for my mistake.
Yeah.
Don't punish the team because everyone. Or don't punish me, as part of the collective because of one teammate who you're not talking to, who you're not communicating to.
Collective punishment.
Now, the worst thing was, I always recognize this with lazy coaching.
Oh.
Lazy coaching.
Yeah.
They would have favorite players in the team that they would, you know, put on pedestals.
Mm.
But now, if you miss the shot in front of the goal, Helmut, it's just you and the goalie. You just have to beat the goalie. Suddenly now you're the worst player ever in human history that has kicked a ball. You're like, where does that fit? But the teacher's pet can't tackle for anything, doesn't want to defend, tries to make a pass, and then you said, but you know what? I was open. You could have passed.
Yeah.
Why were you trying tricks? Scenarios like that obviously is very subjective because it obviously speaks towards, you know,
personal experience.
Personal experiences and so on. But it also doesn't actually satisfy the understanding in the discussion also about potentially looking at the violence on children or the corporal punishment or the violence in school or domestic violence specifically on children scenarios. But there are indicators usually from a very violent, let me call it a setting. So now this gets me to the actual story that I should have started on.
Yeah.
By grade 8, 1998, President Nyoma once again emphasized no violence, no corporal punishment in schools. So we sat in our home teacher's classroom at that stage, and one of my friends at the time, no longer friends with the guy because, you know, we drifted apart, but my friend at the time, he was also a teacher's child, he literally responded by saying, okay, how it all started out, because I'm definitely not an angel in this scenario. How it all started out was I admitted I didn't do my English homework. And then I got like the insults of a lifetime that any 14-year-old could only imagine. And that's from a teacher. I mean, I sat there thinking to myself like, what is going on here? Because you just sit there going like, what's this now? You know, any teacher would have said, okay, listen, Dwight. Look, okay, not any teacher. Let me be honest. This is the 90s. I'm talking about a generation who really believed in dusting you out as a kid.
Yeah.
And they saw nothing wrong as adults
yeah.
in doing that to you. Let me be honest. Those Namibians, those Namibians,
yeah,
are still they're still alive, and yeah, they are still active in the world. Those Namibians are the Namibians who the Americans and the Europeans have now classified as the Boomer generation. The Boomer generation are the ones, for example,
that believes in roughing you up,
roughing you out,
form of disciplinary,
yeah,
measures.
And they're also the ones that make you feel uncomfortable. I'll give you a case in point specifically of a famous quote that President Geingob used. The one where the youth were asking for jobs from universities, and then President Geingob gave them the famous statement that was recorded in the publications about, now go start businesses.
Mm-hmm.
Don't ask for jobs, go start businesses. That is classic Boomer.
Go make your own jobs.
That is classic Boomer.
Response.
Classic Boomer. The Boomers are also the ones that ask you, why are you so lazy? The Boomers are the ones that say, just because Dwight speaks English in this particular manner, yeah, he's putting on an act.
Mm.
Or they would cite, yeah, you know, they would technically still be part of the generations that would still hold grudges from the pre-independence era against everybody else. And you could see it.
Mm-hmm.
People have grudges across the country. But still, Boomers do that. Now, at that stage, Helmut, the teacher told, you know, after I got the insult of my lifetime for that day, for that morning, starting the day.
Jeez.
She went and said something about,
one breakfast.
If that's not to us, because she's a teacher, she went and said she went and stood in her classroom door.
Yeah.
And then looking inwards into the class, and she said something like, if you guys don't pick up, it's something in that line of, you guys don't improve your act as my class, I will go and ask one of the teachers from, who are known for disciplining their classes, their home classrooms, to come and discipline you guys. Because she wasn't one of those teachers that technically used violence.
Mm-hmm.
But for her, utilizing that manipulative strategy was technically indicative of her own violence that she could harbor, meaning the emotional, psychological attacks that she could give you being a adult in the equation.
Mm-hmm.
Then the guy that was my friend, who's also a teacher's child, said, but ma'am, the president said corporal punishment is now illegal. This is her sentence. Verbatim. Verbatim, Helmut. We have special, this is the high school, Dr. Lemmer. Mm. We have special permission from the ministry to use violence.
That's definitely cooked up.
It's definitely the biggest, slimiest lie you could ever think of. Now, as a teenager, as a 14-year-old, Helmut,
let alone minister?
What do you know what the adults are telling each other? Ne? Yeah. What do you know? Because at that stage, my face was half contorting, and then I started sweating buckets, and I was like, oh my goodness, I'm in a world of trouble for no reason. But it was one of the mechanisms in which the teachers of that generation were playing mind games on kids. Mind games, Amut.
And special permission from the minister, definitely mind
games. Yay! So,
look, I'm going to give him credit. I mean, that's fast thinking. Diabolical, but fast thinking.
No, it's ugly, bruh. It's ugly. So we really have to interrogate, in some cases, in scenarios also, in terms of the households that children in Namibia are raised in.
Mm.
We really have to interrogate this. Helmut.
So the cultural component that...
I'm talking about on the household community level,
yeah,
not just culture. Because culture, in some cases, culture can hide the violence of a society.
Yeah, actually, it's biggest cover.
Yeah,
yeah.
Cultural, like saying things like my culture, who I am, what my group of people are all gimmicks at putting up a facade. And many of these Namibians, you know, guys, I really love Namibia. I like my country, but sometimes you guys just push the buttons to another level. Please, guys, if you're gonna start with a scam, the biggest scam in Namibia has been my culture scams. The biggest scam in Namibia has been my culture scams.
Yeah.
And another scam alongside that scam has been the traditional authority scams.
Which is?
How traditional authorities hide a lot of violence?
Not really. They basically run the traditional courts in dispute resolutions.
Yes. Now think about those households. Think about where these kids are.
Yeah.
Those kids are probably not part of the reported instances in this report. Because remember,
so the report could be more urbanized in a way.
Could be more urbanized.
They narrowed it down to every region. So yeah. Even on a regional level, it could be that a large number of the stats are coming from urban areas, not rural areas.
Yes.
I think this is where it should be sort of like split now in terms of, but I think this also brings up a rich discussion in terms of reaching the furthest part of the country when you are, doing not just the child protection type of, statistics, but, just the statistics on everything, including unemployment, access to healthcare, education, all that.
Indeed, yeah. Because when you think about, for example, rural communities in many ways are cut off. Doesn't matter how much I hear from Minister of Agriculture Extension offices whenever I go to like the regions on various particular like field visits. Doesn't matter how many times you hear about the good that an extension office tries to bring. You just have to wonder and think to yourself, what happens around here? How do these people report violence when they need protection in a domestic situation?
You know, I brought up the whole cultural aspect.
Yeah.
It's because I know that in my culture, it's something that, and this is again, it's my culture, but I'm nowhere an expert at it. But from my observation.
You are from the culture.
You have no idea how much, this is the part where where the elders in my, from my region will sit me down and tell me, actually, that is not how it's done. Now, listen to us. The way it was done is this and this and this. Now, the thing is, uncles.
Yeah.
Culturally, growing up, one thing that I remember clearly and know very well about my culture is that uncles are your department. They basically play the role of your, your security cluster. Every time that you misbehave, especially against your mom, your uncle comes into the picture. And those guys are coming in, a fist flying.
On you, yeah.
Uncles have, at least in my culture, one thing that I have observed is that they play the role of Department of Correction. So, now, as you can imagine, this is a cultural practice.
Yeah.
And because it's a cultural practice, the measures that are going to be used is more, get me a stick so that I can just discipline this boy instead of just sitting there and trying to figure out, okay, now, what's going on here? Yeah, is there something that I should know?
Yeah.
There's talking involved, but more often it gets to the point of, get me a stick. I don't have time for any discussions. Yeah.
Do you know how many times I feared that line?
Yeah.
Get me a stick. Usually from a teacher. And then they send then we're like all the boys in the class.
Yeah.
And they pick the one boy who the whole boys in the class will look at, you better get the thinnest one. You better get the thinnest one.
Look, I think I was about 14 or 15 there. I remember that when my dad set me down and, and gave me one of the speech that's basically stuck in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that he said was, you're an adult now.
Mm.
I can't punish you in the same way that I used to punish you when you were a kid.
Mm.
Right now, from now moving forward, the only thing I can do if in the event of any screw up is sit you down and talk to you.
Mm.
Yeah, but more than that, it's not that there's nothing I can do. There's nothing much I can do apart from just sitting you down and trying to reason with you.
Mm.
Yeah. And, but before that, hey, it was Idi Amin, Mussolini.
All the dictators. Put them in. You just had to pick them on what type of mood it was. You just have to pick the mood and then you find the dictator.
Now on his worst day, you're looking at the Austrian painter.
with a slight hint of Stalin in there.
Just throw it in.
But
one thing I learned from that, father son type of talk was that maybe I think culturally it's seen that there's a certain age range where reasoning is not your strong suit, where you have this juvenile behavior where you wanna, break everything that you touch. But then you reach the age where your reasoning is now sitting in, where that's where, it's sitting in and more developing to the point where they can just sit you down and explain to you how the world around you works, why you shouldn't, how to behave around, around adults, how to interact with friends, and how to solve disputes instead of, going, fist flying like we did growing up. You should report everything to the adults and then let them handle it from there. Yeah. Because one thing that that you have seen is, and this is very common in this is very common in rural settings, was basically everywhere. One thing that you see is that when adults are not very good at sorting things out through talking, they will always find themselves exchanging blows over something that their kids started.
Yeah.
Now, what's going to happen is
So that gets like the last level of the tensions.
Yeah, exactly. So now what happens now is you'll have, take 5-year-olds now that will just fight while playing. And then their adults will start fighting because of who started what at the playground.
Mm.
So they are five. In less than an hour, they have forgotten why they fought in the first place. They're already playing.
But the adults
still remember every single blow that was thrown. And they will hate each other forever.
That's the dumbest reason to fight.
I know, right?
Oh, my 5-year-old boy.
So this is some of the things that, at least from a cultural, perspective, something that I was taught about, dispute resolution.
Mm.
When you're an adult and you are both adults, you find out that your kids were involved in some kind of physical confrontation. You don't just, upgrade that physical confrontation to your level. Figure out what happened, and then sit them down and tell them that there are better ways of doing this.
Mm.
Because if you start exchanging blows because they exchanged blows, believe me, the next day they will be sitting together at school having lunch.
And then you guys will be just angry at each other.
Yeah, you still be angry at each other. Isn't that just dumb?
Yes, it is, Ahmed. The first thing I've realized, like in children's politics,
let them fight.
Let them fight. Don't carry grudges. If that other parent is going to have an issue with it. Do you know who I saw it with, basically?
Yeah.
With my younger brother. One day, he and his friend would be like, brother, be insulting each other into each other's ancestries. And then I stand there laughing because I know, just tomorrow, they'll be playing together. And they were like 12, 13 with each other at that age. And we moved to Windhoek at that stage.
Yeah.
Because I found it fascinating. Because I knew.
Yeah.
If me and my buddy were fighting today as 8-year-olds, I'd still hold a grudge. But then tomorrow we'll still play together. We'll be like,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
And you say, sorry, brother, I beat you up yesterday. You even apologize. You say, sorry, brother, I beat you up.
I think that points to just how innocent kids are.
Yeah.
One, kids are brutally honest.
Yes, they are.
One of the jokes that Chicken like to tell, especially about kids, he likes to say that, look, as a father, I can tell you that when you are in public with your kids, you're gonna have to keep a tight leash on them because the things they will say, for them it's a compliment. Now he's in town with one of his boys.
Yeah.
They come across one of his old friend. the kid starts, you know, quote unquote, complimenting the man's, you know, weight into oblivion. Now, he's trying to do damage control here. And the boy is just going.
The boy is not getting the hint, you know?
He's not getting.
No, because I know such a scenario.
You do?
Yeah. It happened. I was at that stage. I was like at 5 or 6. It was just before my parents divorced. And my dad at that stage took us to Oranjemund. I don't remember Oranjemund. I just remember the road there.
Yeah.
On the way. But what happened was this younger brother of mine, he was like a 3-year-old. He was like a choker key, you know. Homeboy comes out the morning. It was a Saturday morning. But we were those kids because we are 5, you know, for my parents. Sometimes you lose, you forget that one of them walked out. You have the 3 eldest, but yeah. Then the younger ones, yeah. You know, you sometimes have these, and especially if it's like us who are predominantly boys. So my younger brother walked out and he went to go see, like, there was like a white family next door, neighboring us.
Yeah.
On the town, and then my younger brother just starts throwing insults and swear words, bruh, for a 3-year-old, and homeboy is shooting, bruh, and the 3 eldest, now when they tell that story, the 3 eldest siblings, they're like, they don't know where he heard these words. They know where he got these words, and then until I told them, listen,
he's just being creative with everything.
No, we knew where he heard them.
What's that?
At that stage, there was a time that my mom kept sending my younger brother and my sister, who was the eldest of us, to my grandmother.
No.
Now, my grandmother is also not one of the most, soft-spoken individuals. She was an auntie that, with a cigarette in the one hand, she would, you know, things would just fly. whether it is you getting beaten, or an insult flying from her mouth. Yeah. Someone catches something. So the unfortunate part was, you could deduce that my younger brother was exposed to the antics and the character of my grandmother at the time. Because my grandfather was already, he passed away before I was born.
Yeah.
And before my younger brother was born. So you could understand he learned from somewhere.
Yeah.
He heard from somewhere. Because it was all in Afrikaans.
Yeah.
So, don't worry, bro. You just have to know who you mention in front of your kids. That's all you have to do. Damage control 101.
Yeah.
Don't gossip about your buddies or your family members in front of the kids. Because then they will say, my uncle, my father says, auntie, that you are so and yay.
No.
When those kids start like that, your biggest worry is not about the 5-year-olds beating each other up.
No. It's what they say.
It's what the 5-year-olds hear what you say and what they then transfer over to other people, other adults. That's your biggest concern.
Now, look, since it's Friday and we're talking about, you know, kids being brutally honest.
Yeah.
There's a, one of my favorite TV show is a comedy TV show. It's American, obviously. It's called The Neighborhood. Now, in The Neighborhood, there was this.
Is it the Kiki Brown? What's her name?
No.
Kiki Palmer.
No, The Neighborhood. Now you have two. Now, okay. There were now there was a black family, and they in the house next door. A white family moves in. The white couple had had a kid about a 10, 11 year old. Oh boy, is as honest as kids. They come. From the moment they arrived, before they even opened the door, he looked to the neighbor's house and saw a black guy. I was like, hey, look, our neighbors are very diverse too.
I've ever heard of a low-key insult. Yo.
I think the good thing is the older we grow, we'll lose that, too much truth. You learn that too much truth gets you killed.
Yeah.
I mean, like, which is a good thing because, well, every guy knows that the best way to die a virgin is tell the truth. Now, children. Back to children.
But I'll be back now.
Okay, a commercial break. Oh, my God, we've been sitting for 2 hours.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have a capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura menace.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to
be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station. The time is 6 minutes past the hour, 3 minutes actually, 4 minutes past the hour of six. And if you just tuned in, this is Omran with Helmed and Dwight on Eagle FM. And we're just talking about where we have all been if you are an adult, and that is being a kid at this time, the time where you are, you know, vulnerable and naive, and you know, being naive as in you don't know the better, you know, with regards to the world around you, which is why a protection is needed at the time. Every living organism actually protects its young. Unless you are a sea turtle, then that's a whole different discussion. Those animals are brutal. Anyway, pardon me. So the Namibia Child Care and Protection Statistics report from the Ministry of Gender and Child Welfare. And in collab with UNICEF from the look of things, so basically it looks at some of the ills being faced socially by children and the mechanisms the government has in place in terms of dealing with these ills. And I think if you are not aware of this, then I don't know. We can all agree that we know about the existence of the Ministry of Gender, right? We can all agree that we all are aware of the existence of Ministry of Home Affairs, Safety and Security, right? Right. Because if you don't, then, oh boy. That's kind of difficult. I think this is where civic education now becomes very important. And actually that's why I like civic education and CSO, that's your civil society organizations, because it sort of like brings to educate you on the program that the Childline Lifeline discussion that we had every Friday before going on with a home run. That's after 25-30 minutes into the hour four. What they seek to point out is, as a child or as a woman, and one thing that we have seen as of late, and I know this is something that is prevalent in society. It's not that common, but and also from cultural and toxic masculinity level, I guess we don't talk about it much. So, which is why, the whole idea of, gender-based, every time that we see the word gender-based violence is brought up, even when I say right here that the words gender-based violence, the first thing that comes in your head is the woman being the victim and the man being the perpetrator. And that's not your fault, because primarily that is the case. In most of the cases of domestic violence, that does not involve children. Domestic violence that involves adults, the largest number of perpetrators are male and the largest number of victims are women. But don't be fooled. That does not mean that men are not also victims in these situations. I came across an article, I think that was a local newspaper article, I think that was last year, of the increasing male domestic, violence victim statistics. I was like, okay, right. And I started, recalculating a lot of, and rethinking all the numbers that I have asked from the other gender about, potential partners. And like, okay, no. That one goes to the gym. That's a lot of muscles. I mean, I'm not criticizing, but the point I'm making is if she has me on a in a chokehold, will I even be able to call the police? And as a guy, and this is one thing that I think it's more often also attributed to, to culture. I don't care how serious you are. 90 to 100% of us, if we were police officers, and a guy shows up to a police station with a blue eye telling you that the wife kicked the crap out of him, you'd be begging your inner self not to laugh. And again, I'm personally going to say that's not your fault, because I know my reaction in that situation. Chances are very high I'll just be on the floor laughing. I think that's one of those funny and also really sad part, because that is more often pushed by this whole idea that, it's like men are supposed to be immune from gender-based violence or, a spouse type, type of abuse. But, it turns out it's not the case. And we saw that with the now very, very, very famous case of Amber Heard and Johnny Depp, where they ended up in court. It turns out when, the whole time bro was making us laugh with Pirates of the Caribbean, trouble was in paradise. Trouble was in paradise. And this actually became a very, classic example of, how much just the external issues that internal domestic disputes cause in, not just in one, in a person's life, but, in a broader spectrum in terms of a society, like a reverberation or domino effect. Take, for example, Johnny Depp was working on Pirates of Caribbean at the time. I'm not sure if that was the same time that they did The Tourist, which is also a very awesome movie. But the thing is, abuse at home, his family dispute, with his wife, had a lot of negative impact that ended up impacting his job, his job, and a role in Pirates of Caribbean. I believe he ended up losing his job, and the agents had to basically dump the guy because of his alleged domestic abuse. And it turns out the whole time that he was losing his his agency and his sponsors and all that because of a domestic abuse, he was the victim the whole time. And it took millions of dollars and a lot of cases and terrible acting from the madam to actually prove that he was the victim. not the other way around. Now, it was very digestible for the society to think that he was the perpetrator, not the victim, because for most cultures in the world, when the words domestic violence are mentioned, it's very intuitive thing that the first picture that comes in your mind is the man being the perpetrator and the woman being the victim. And like I pointed out earlier, that's the picture that comes in most minds. That's the picture that comes in my mind, and it's not your fault, it's not my fault, but that's because if you look at the statistics, I think that's one of the most contributing factors. I'm not an expert at this. I think one of the most contributing factors is because in most of these cases, majority of the victims are women and majority of the perpetrators are men. And I think the same can be applied to, to child abuse. If you watch investigation discoveries, then you must have come across a documentary or two where where children took the lives of their parents, and that happened in 2015 in January in South Africa. But the thing is, in the very same way that every time that the words domestic violence are mentioned, the first picture that comes in your head because of the statistics associated to this type of to this type of violence is that when the words domestic violence are mentioned, the first picture that pops up is the woman is the victim and the man is the perpetrator. And that's because in 90% of the times, that is the case. But that does not negate the fact that you also have, male victims in this type of scenarios. And that point of view can also be seen if you talk about child abuse, for example. Yeah. There are a lot of cases where children, took the lives of their parents. But when you talk about child abuse, even the phrasing and the language itself is giving that picture of the child being the victim and the parent being the perpetrator.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, this is not something that's new. We're just, trying to update sort of like a way of dealing with it because it's been part of human society all throughout history. Domestic violence has always been there, unfortunately. And, child abuse has always been there, unfortunately. And, throw in population boom and urbanization and statistics becomes very important, especially if you are looking at the size of society that we have built for the 21st century. Because for a very long time, it was more like clusters of tribes. And now fast forward to the 21st century, you have a landmass the size of Namibia with all kinds of, different tribes, different age groups and different races just trying to live together in cohesion. And of course, you need a whole new way of dealing with all these social problems.
USAF's customers love combos, right? Well, for just $589 Namibian, you can get 10 kilograms Champion Super Maize Meal, 10 kilograms of Bokomo Fed Cooked Flour, 10 kilograms of Marathon of Brown or White Sugar, 5 kilos of Nice Rice, plus 1 kilo of Grande Pasta. That's just $589 Namibian for 5 essential products. The ShopRite Group buys bulk, so you can save. Yes, we all save at USAID.
Welcome back. Before we continue, where's that?
Yeah, I've got it.
Okay, light read.
Vavitch University for the 2027 applications that are now open for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following programs: Certificate for Enrolled Nurse Midwife or Accoucheur Level 6, Certificate in Pharmacy Level 5, Diploma in Environmental Health Sciences Level 6, Bachelor of Social Work Honours, Bachelor of Nursing and Midwifery Science Honours, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety Level 8, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health Nursing Level 8, Master of Public Health, Master of Occupational Health and Safety. For more information, please call 081-403-6406. Velvetia University, where everyone is an achiever.
Welcome back. Protection and care. And I like that we started, you know, we're having this discussion today, and we started with, started off with the Witani Childline Lifeline radio program, we had a nutrition discussion yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, and
the food discussion, like David calls it.
Yeah, food discussions.
David even asked me, why were you guys talking about food yesterday? And sat there looking and just stood there looking at him going like, well, it's crucial because you need food, David, if you're listening.
Now, is there a discussion that does not encompass food? I mean, development itself has food at the center of it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And the important thing of it has to be about how much of that food you get as a child. For not just your own biological development, but also for the society at large. Because you can't just say one person should be well fed and the other people are struggling to eat. Everybody should potentially be eating adequately enough so as to try and then be the best kinds of Namibians or members of society that said particular government wants us to be. Or the state, not the government, the state wants us to be. But then I'm explaining a wishful position.
Ideal world.
An ideal world. Yeah. A fairy tale dimension. You know, a Disney depiction for better illustration.
Yeah.
The concern is, for example, like this report obviously gives interventions and what was collected because of, you know, what the ministry assessed during the 10-year period. However, they have a chapter, which is chapter 4, on challenges, opportunities, and recommendations. The challenges that obviously suffice is, for example, ministry... Okay. Let me start from a position where we assume two ministries actually have the same kinds of people present across the country. So that's Ministry of Health, because the other part of Ministry of Health's name is also Social Services, and this Ministry of Gender. Now, it is not clearly stipulated here that the ministries are working in silos, so I'm avoiding that label, and I'm not going to that indicate in any manner or dimension.
If anything, it looks like they are not working in silos.
Yes, because Ministry of Gender relied on social worker contributions.
Yeah.
But I had to look at, you remember in this report, there's like, I think page 2 or page 3, where they, no? Page 4, after the minister's foreword, there's an indication of the various people that contributed to this report.
Yeah.
And there is no Ministry of Health indication. Now, Ministry of Health, at one stage, as far as I knew, did have social work, a division or department that had social workers, where they had social workers. Now, it seems Ministry of Gender has also their own social worker departments. And then there's obviously the regional branches of the government, meaning the regional authorities that also have these particular, services or these professionals available.
Yeah.
Now, the concern is, it's obviously a concern in terms of how many of these people do we have scattered across the country? Because remember, a social worker also then has to assess, for example, Hamoud, like an adult, or, and this can be a man as well that might not be contained within this report, or a woman, an adult woman who might not be contained in this report because this report is just about children's welfare. And primarily the potential threats and stresses that those two adults go through as guardians potentially of children, and the children would be recorded under this report because this report's name is about child protection and care. But then, you know, potentially were there any other victims in a domestic scenario? Now, safe to say, there were obviously other particular agencies and officers also participating in this report's particular formulation, because UNICEF is here, NSA is here, There's someone else that I forgot. Projects, Childline Lifeline, who obviously also, you know, like you said, it was coincidental and pretty, you know, funny that technically they also participated in this report's formalization. But they cite that lack of technological infrastructure is their main particular worry.
And I'm going to put that as the second main.
I'll put this at number five. Because number one is literally in the executive summary or in the minister's foreword, one of the two. The executive summary is by the executive director and the minister. But one of the two cite that, and this is seen in some of the statistics, that some of the data sets were not as polished as they would have hoped. As properly, you know, when you do data analysis in some cases, there's a phrase they call data. There's data mining, first getting the data.
Yeah.
Then you've got to do the polishing, which is in actual term they use, the data, you know, you take what you need, you sift through what extra can still be used.
Yeah.
And then you just use what you have.
What is relevant to the report you're compiling.
Yeah. And then you go with that part. Now, the actual data analysis and polishing, as you can see, I use just to highlight the specific correction that I had to to apply a little bit earlier in the show was I said that, you know, it doesn't tell you like the crimes and stuff and so forth, but when you get into some of the subsets of these in chapter 3 where they look at the various services, because remember chapter 3 starts out data and the various services that help with intervening when there's a child in need.
Yeah.
Right? And then you go like, okay, that's the part. You read through. And then when you read through, you are actually told so many children experienced this kind of abuse, or so many children experienced violent crime, or so many children were neglected, and so many children were abandoned, and so many children were maltreated by a guardian or a parent. And then you actually go, but there are the actual events that I wanted. Now, here's the thing. Here's the thing. That executive summary doc at the start of the report that cites proper record keeping and proper, like, saying, okay, when you look at chapter 2 or chapter 1, no, chapter 2, when you look at chapter 2, when they say, these are the statistics where you have to ask the question of, are these recurring patients or are these like brand new patients every year?
You know why there are a lot of gaps with regards to information that you'd expect from a report like this?
Yeah.
Now, this is just at the top of my head, but the fragmentation on page 39.
Yeah.
Like you pointed out, I'm not going to say you guys are working in silos, but that's what it looks like.
I know that it says it here. That's why I wanted to push it to the one side.
Yeah, because if you look at it.
And I wanted to avoid for once not saying the same song, but unfortunately, they do it to themselves.
Yeah, they do that because, you know, on page 39, that last paragraph is a fragmentation. And, you know, after that fragmentation part, look, I understand the limited training and resources, the challenge, you know, lack of technological infrastructure and all that. But, you know, okay, look, for, you know, if you don't have infrastructure and you don't have the technology, advanced technology, you would, you know, you'd want to use everything that you have at your disposal to make sure that, you know, to compensate for what you don't have.
True.
Yeah, but here's the thing. There is not enough, you know, training, not enough infrastructure, not enough technology, and then you just make it more like intentional at this point, not to work with the pieces that are already easily available.
Yep.
Now, the lack of infrastructure and lack of technology points to something. Makes it very difficult to gather information, obviously. So now that means, okay, now, well, we have sister ministries. We can't, you know, well, we don't have to do this on our own as Minister of Gender. So now you'd expect, like they point out in the fragmentation that, you know, you'd expect, we're talking about children here, how to keep them, you know, how to keep them safe. Who else has information about children? Ministry of Education. And who else have you know, information about children? Mm. You have the information hub of everything, documentation. You have the Ministry of Home Affairs, and you have your Ministry of Health. Now, except they actually didn't do that. Now, which is not surprising, because the next one after that, after fragmentation is cultural and social barriers. And just one after that is data quality. Of course, you're going to have data quality issues if you don't have the infrastructure, the technology, and you're working in.
Now, do you see how far data quality is in that hierarchy of challenges?
Yeah.
Where it should have actually been number one, then the tech, then you get the cultural barrier. Because, look, we have to identify certain. And that's why I reference traditional authorities can hide things, Almut.
Mm-hmm.
Look. In an urban setting, you can forget about that thing about culture. I've seen this so many times. You would have a whole bunch of country bumpkins come and tell you, yeah, my culture, left, right, and then you see they're the biggest alcoholics on the street, and you're like, where was the culture, huh? Where was the strong carrying the culture on the shoulder situation?
Well,
on the sleeve, Khudersa. But you're the guy, but you're the first one who gives in to vices. Where's the culture? So, the cultural barrier is strong in a rural setting.
Yeah.
It's not strong in an urban setting. Hence the reason why I also gave the position of how should we look at this data? Is it urban representation or is
rural
it
or overall?
Or is it a combination of urban and rural? Does it encompass the rural settings as well?
Except the report doesn't make that life easy, because the information is not split in that way in terms of categorization. Yeah.
We do get the female-male split in terms of the victims. But the dimension then, which was literally a whole different report, like you and I already satisfied, was if it was a crime report, like an actual crime report dedicated to children who are predominantly the victims.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get to see where it took place, where's the location, where most of these locations were spread, urban or rural, what kind of rural settings. Cloak communal, or is it a small, like these generational farm worker communities?
Mm-hmm.
And then what kind of, and then you look in like into like the living standards of or the living standards scale of these communities. For example, trying to understand, was this something that potentially is induced because of the economic level of this household or not? How about, we don't know what kind of if I can say it rather, an economic profile most of these children in this report are. We're just being given a blanket report of like this, you know, a child is a child. A child is a child. But in some cases, we've got to understand the nuances. Now, if I now went and asked for the ultimate coup de grace, sort of like, you know, that reference that you gave earlier about the TV show you like watching, Neighbors,
mm-hmm.
where the kid said, Our neighbors are diverse. Yeah. Now, if I went and asked, let's look for a diverse depiction.
Yeah.
Nah. We would not see that dimension. We would definitely not see it. No, and potentially probably also in one that shows the other side of this kind of report. Because this report counts the circumstances under which these children are, under which the interventions are brought in to the benefit of the children.
Mm-hmm.
So we also need to understand the other side. Who are the perpetrators? What were the conditions that these children had to experience? And we're not going to see that report. I'll tell you now, we won't see that report. That kind of report, you will not see. It's like I found out when I asked, I won't mention names also, but I do know that they listen to us, because they are Namibian police, Nampol. But I asked one day, when the forensics lab was inaugurated by the former Inspector General Shikongo, I asked the Deputy Commissioner for Communications, you know, is there a report that the police does on monthly or annually assessing crime in this country? Do you know that in Europe, in London, I watched, like I told you, I watched... There's a specific presenter I like watching from a London-based radio station, LBC. His name is James O'Brien. Mm-hmm. And this morning, he had to defend London, basically. And I was wondering, what do you mean you're defending London? And then it was based upon a specific report, an analytical crime report of London, of London's propensity to have violent crime and crimes across any scenario.
Yeah.
And he was then obviously, because he's a one-man show, basically, with callers that call in, that engage, and sometimes argue with him, and he sometimes also cuts them off violently if they don't make sense, where the discussion was based upon why is the political narrative in the UK about depicting London as this crime capital of the world,
mm-hmm.
where the police statistics, the British police statistics,
showing something different,
are basically saying that London is probably heaven to all the states in the United States. Because James O'Brien compared London to the whole of the United States. And he even spoke to the guy that, the founder of Wikipedia. It's an American guy. The guy lives in London. A Stephen something. He spoke to that founder. He interviewed the guy also, because they've got like a separate interview platform. And then the founder of Wikipedia tells James, you know what, James, I don't know what these people are talking about, because he would have friends calling him out of the United States saying, but you know, Stephen, how does it feel living in such a violent city? And then
he's like, what are you talking about?
But you know, if you land for the first time in London for the first 5 minutes, you are considerably safe. Do you know what's contested as a violent crime in London, Helmut?
What's that?
When the asset forfeiture guys pull knives on you just to intimidate you to, you know, basically forfeit your possessions,
mm-hmm.
that's their level of violent crime.
Not
stealing a cell phone.
Not a hungry and angry teenager showing up with an assault rifle at school.
Definitely. Who believes the world is against him and decides to, you know, mass delete everyone in his school,
mm-hmm.
just for the fun of it. No. They don't have that. So, we've got to ask these particular questions as well. Why don't we get these kinds of data sets in Namibia? Namibia, Helmut, Namibia's whole agenda is about modernizing. But why are we trying to hide certain data sets? We need to know what's going on. We need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Helmut, better policymaking will come out of a scenario of if we know so many violent crimes were committed in a region. So many stabbings happened in this region. So many car hijackings happened here. So many wildlife crimes happened here. So many farm crimes or agricultural-based crimes happened here. So, you know, we need to know these kinds of depictions. Because really, it's tedious. Taking every Sunday's crime reports, Helmut,
mm-hmm.
and trying to put them in a spreadsheet. Do you know how tedious that exercise is? And now you've got to match them individually. And now you've got to see who is actually the crime capital of Namibia and what is happening there and what is happening where and what is that. It's a tedious exercise.
You know, one of the... this is one of those things that bring me back to solving symptoms instead of solving the root cause of the problem.
Yeah.
And
We are more... what do you call it? We show up with the medicine instead of actually promoting well-being from the start.
Because if you were promoting the well-being, you would not be dealing with the problems that will require you to come up with medicine. A lot of medical professionals have this point of view with regards to the literal practice of medicine today.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, I'm bringing that up with regards to this discussion because of if you look at incarceration in a lot of European countries, especially the Netherlands.
Yeah.
Now, the Netherlands, back in 2016?
Yeah.
They announced that their incarceration facilities were, you know, a lot of them had to be closed down, and some of them were being turned into school hostels because they were running out of offenders to incarcerate. And I think that for me, and if you look up, it's one of those running jokes in terms of holding cells and prisons. Mm. You have Norway, Finland, and parts of Spain. You have you also have the Netherlands. They have this holding cells that's better, way better than my room. Now here's the thing. What that comes from is, if you take care of the economic inequality on the ground, you will have much less problems like this, especially with, in relation to crime, to deal with. Because a lot of, you'll find a lot of people that are just falling in the wrong crowd because of, they have to make ends meet.
Yeah.
It's not something that's recommended, but desperation tends to do things like that to you. So, again, every time that we talk about, let's compile these statistics now, let's look at, how many, all the crime statistics, and what type of crimes took place in which part of the country. All this to a larger degree is very preventable if you take care of the cost of living for the most part.
Yeah.
But the thing is, we pretend like this is not the root cause, and this is actually the biggest problem with countries like, especially the two biggest economies on the African continent, that's Nigeria and South Africa.
Mm.
Yeah, you have urban areas that are so big, and they have parts of town, parts of the of the informal settlement. Even the police are scared to go. But the question is. If population increase was the only reason behind this prevalence in crime of these levels, countries like China and India would be the crime capital. Except that's not the case. So it's not a population problem. It's how, social problems are solved on the ground. Because when they are not solved, what you end up having is a problem where you have people that are now literally living the life of crime. Every time, I haven't actually been following all the political task force in South Africa and the political associated type of killing, like a hit squad type of killing, to silence a witness or a whistleblower, like we saw with Bobita Diokaran in August of 2022.
Yeah.
What you see there is. It's just a bunch of youth basically that were most likely paid by someone who knows someone in a public office to go and commit a heinous crime, which they did. Either that's because of most likely crimes like that are attributed to the use of heavy drugs. Someone have to basically get to do anything that they can to get their next high. So whether it's a drug abuse or crime or high crime statistics, all these things, when you're looking at the root cause, it more often takes you to
household, community,
exactly, household,
societal,
exactly,
yeah.
Influences. Charity begins at home. Well, it turns out not just charity. Charity begins at home, but well, guess what? The psychological psychological trauma that is someone is exposed to from a domestic level influences their tends to influence their childhood and who they become overall in part as being an overall member of a society.
I told you, Helmut, what happened 2-3 weeks back when that one Sunday when my younger brother and I went to go help my sister move in Rehoboth, about the kids that we saw across the street. And that was happening like, wow. Just like this. We didn't want to make it obvious as Vantukers, As Vantukers, you're like gawking there like, really? Because you also realize this is someone else's kids. And that thing that you mentioned, trying to now intervene on someone else's kid and then the parents come and, come and fold you in five directions. The possibility also.
Make origami out of you.
The possibility is pretty high in that scenario. But. Yeah. The dimension was how young those kids were, what they were busy with, how young they were.
Yeah.
Now, what is the sad point of such a situation? You could see what you and I were dissecting when the census report came out in 2024,
yeah.
The population bulge, remember that dimension?
Yeah.
And that population bulge...
In each category.
...was the first particular indicator of societal issues that a country like Namibia might suffer if these young Namibians are not quickly given, like, activities, productive activities to participate in, what would be consumed productive? Let me put this in inverted commas. Considered productive.
Yeah.
Because I don't see any particular direct proof also justifying,
mm-hmm.
would the activity still work in a time frame like 2026?
Yeah.
So, scenarios like this then also point towards the lack of the police presence.
Mm-hmm.
Because those young boys who were doing that thing right there in front of us, they were doing it just like that. Wow. Just like that. Just like that in public. Daylight, sun, bright daylight, sun was shining.
With an I don't care attitude.
It was like, this is my life. And you ask yourself, where is the police and their community engagement aspect in this regard? Because you know what, Helmut?
I think my first question would be, where are the parents?
It's not just about the parents. Because in some cases, we also have to identify, like with these street kids here in Namibia,
yeah.
Here in Windhoek.
Yeah.
The street kids. And not that I've asked them this directly,
mm-hmm.
because in many cases, I was just trying my best to rather just see what they wanted so that they can get away from me as quick as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So if they say, please give uncle or sir or, you know, please give me a $5 or something, I give them whatever coins I still have left and then just get away. But there were scenarios, for example, when people who had acute knowledge of why Windhoek has these street kids, which are vulnerable children,
yeah.
at a time was, they were most of them were running away from problematic homes. Most of them were running away from problematic homes.
So it's a domestic issue.
It's a domestic issue once again. And do you see what it creates? It creates people who live under bridges at dump sites, who live off dump sites, who have to sell trash. That's why that idea that I gave, the one about having the vending machines at supermarkets, yeah, like that Danish example that I found,
yeah.
like that Danish example,
yeah.
was that would equalize for everybody. Because now the thing is, instead of them taking that trash to the dump site and selling it to whoever is buying the trash,
mm-hmm.
they could literally go to the shop and literally buy food for themselves. Because those guys that collect from your trash cans during the week when the trash lorry has to come and get that trash,
yeah.
those guys, they need food and water. They need food and water. They're malnourished humans. But the concern is, for example, like in this report potentially ignores the existence of those guys, Helmut, because those guys were teenagers. Some of them are teenagers. And some of them were children that lived under such circumstances like this report highlights here. The sad thing is you can see the person is falling through the crack.
Yeah.
They are the embodiment of the crack in the system. Now, the sad thing is, this is the first of such a report that I've ever heard, because you can obviously see the ministry has tracked it for 10 months.
Do you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a U-Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250 mm jars of Vaseline for only $25 Namibian. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99 Namibian. Get 2 kilograms of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99 Namibian. Get 750 mm Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99 Namibian. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99 Namibian. U-Save. Where else?
Do
you need toiletries and household cleaners? You won't get it cheaper than a You Save up to the 7th of June. Get 250ml jars of Vaseline for only $25. Smell fresh with Playboy roll-on deodorant for just $18.99. Get 2kg of Surf's hand washing powder for just $49.99. Get 750ml Sunlight dishwashing liquid for $28.99. And get 2 boxes of Cares Maxi sanitary pads for only $12.99. You Save. Where else?
Welcome to Illegal Roadblock. Sorry, home run.
You have to love Africa, guys.
Yeah, you have to love Africa. Well, it's just one of those, off the mic jokes of, but they're all home run related. Don't worry. You know, turns out one of the reasons behind, Lupito Corridor. Lupito Corridor group is here. There are a bunch of guys in, of that part of Central Africa, Zambia, DRC, Angola that are setting up, How does someone set up an illegal road toll?
I told you about the tolls that I've discovered in Zimbabwe on that bus service.
Unknown hectares? Seriously?
No, they were not unknown. This was the nature conservation guys of Zimbabwe and the police. And I, for myself as a Namibian at the time, I couldn't understand, now why does Zimbabwe have 2
road tolls?
But here's the thing, you drive a kilometer, you find the police.
You drive
the first
another
one that you find is the nature conservation.
And you have to pay on both.
Yeah. Then you drive a kilometer, you find the police. Then you drive 200 kilos, then you find another nature conservation. And this is not as you're driving from province to province to province.
Yeah.
And you get just another kilometer behind the nature conservation one is the police again. And every time the bus driver is telling us, please give your $1, please give your $1, please give your $1.
I think the bus driver is in on it.
Definitely, because as a corporate company, how do you
promote something
sustainably ensure your business functions is that you collect a toll beforehand.
That's actually from that's from April 30,
2024. Yeah.
Yeah, from the an organization announced.
That's literally before Biden flew there. Biden flew there at the end of 2024.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
When he went to João, to Lourenço.
Yeah.
He flew there in November, December, just after the elections was concluded in the US. And then to basically give, the gold approval for the $600 million.
Well.
But, yeah, now we know. Why Lupito Corridor exists. Or is coming to into.
Look, man, it's one of the reasons. Not
No, it is probably the main reason. Because the guy says it's expensive.
Every time that we complain about expensive for modes of transport, I always think of it from a damaged or lack of infrastructure. I say
expensive. That's how us Namibians think, because we see potholes, we call it damaged or lack of infrastructure. That's our headache. In DRC, it is because of local actors.
Unknown local actors.
Local actors.
So all you just need is, throw in a camouflage and block the road and start charging.
Show up with gumboots. Show up with gumboots.
Man, are we spoiled in this country?
Put a bunch of boulders in the road and say, Horse Owens, this is my road.
And you all are complaining about a speed hump in a highway. Like that's our pain, guys. That's how advanced we are.
We've got first world issues.
We have first world problems. Namibia has first world problems.
Namibia has first world issues. Yeah, guys, you must count yourselves lucky. You are living in a paradise with speed humps.
Yeah, you are complaining
in
about
DRC, it. They don't even know what speed humps are.
You even know who to complain to because the minister is there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the police are there.
DRC, they don't know who to complain.
Look, these guys
have
not.
They have to ask the EU, can we build this thing?
They had to build infrastructure instead of complaining to the police.
Yeah. There you guys go.
Do you have any idea how terrible your police are if your investors have to build a road to navigate challenges?
No, here's the thing. They have to ask the president of that country, ask SADC to ask the EU if we can build this thing.
All that?
Yes.
To navigate illegal road tolls?
Illegal road tolls.
Look,
your police don't even command.
Look, they could have just brought all these countries together, and plus they already have a lot of mechanisms in place on how you know their minister, their anti-corruption, their anti-corruption institutions, their different ministers of finance, ministers or ministers of all this. Their ministers of SADC ministers of SADC ministers of health, not of health, of energy.
Yeah.
Yeah, recently met where they had all kinds of discussions on how to reach this unanimous consensus on how to bring together their how to help each other meet their energy and water needs. So they could have just brought together all the ministers of police to solve the problem. I think I think the
pain. That's another issue, Helmut. Is AfriPol dissected that way?
Oh yeah, that's a problem.
Because those guys will be meeting under AfriPol, which is the Africa aspect of Interpol.
Division of Interpol, yeah.
Yeah. So, and I suspect there is probably something like that.
We
don't have a minister of police, you know that.
Yeah, we have our security class, basically we have the Minister of Defense, and you have the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Safety and Security, and then you have the intelligence guys. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, like you just pointed out, we have first world problems. We're complaining about the speed hump. Now, this right here, look, man, your investors, do you have any idea how sad this picture is? You have your investors telling you that.
And
man,
I told you, ne.
Look,
we don't know what's happening in DRC, ne. Now we know. Now we know. There's lawlessness in DRC. And I had a suspicion. DRC is lawless. Remember the story after last year?
Yeah.
When you and I were highlighting that gang of teenagers that got executed, execution.
Oh, man, those were actually gangs that I think they thought they had some kind of moral code where they would, say things like, they will not, they will not rob, the people that they know. They would basically do that somewhere else. But you do realize that creates factions, and at the end of the day, you have, these factions.
Civil war.
Exactly.
Yeah. And what I described to you was the largest possibility of the characteristic of that whole gang was primarily those were child soldiers because of Eastern DRC, because they were executed in East DRC.
Now, that's the thing. It's like you just pointed out, it all begins where? At home.
Yeah.
So the environment you are exposed to growing up really shape the adult you become.
Yeah. And these guys were still
That's actually very scary.
No, it is. It is.
Because
it's not what this report says.
Because, like you pointed out, with regards to the, to street kids here in Namibia, so most of them, if not all of them, are running away from conditions that are not conducive at home. Mm-hmm. Is no one leaves their house on purpose to go and sleep under the bridge because everything is going hokey dokey at home.
You've got all conveniences.
You have all the conveniences.
Yeah.
Because, that's very counterintuitive.
Then people would know that you technically have one or other mental issues.
Yeah, mental issues, yeah.
Yeah. But in many scenarios, the unfortunate thing is, unfortunately, things are not rosy.
No.
They're not rosy. Yes, in this report, they would say that the kid was neglected or abandoned. Sure. But what about if the kid also runs away? There was the major talking points when I was still a child, but that my mom them used to talk about things from the 70s, 80s, and into the 90s.
Yeah.
Children that ran away, Helmut, because of abusive parenting, or because of households, their families were just too, I don't like using the word toxic, because the word toxic technically kills you, if that's what toxicity is all about.
Mm-hmm.
But since this is now a Gen Z labeling, okay, a toxic household situation. We all know of such a situation in our personal lives.
Yeah.
We all know of it. The downside is just how do you then try to deal with things that are not, you know, you can't send the police in and go and sort it out, because the police will say, but that's a domestic issue. And the police will even use their favorite tagline of saying, we will only intervene only and up until a crime has committed. Now, what do you do if a crime has not been committed? How do you act if a crime has not been committed?
Mm-hmm.
What actions do you deploy if a crime has not been committed? And these are some of the, you know, the finer details between the lines and the things that are not so clear. That they're just not clear, but you can see the issues because you can, you know, you've seen them, you know, you've experienced them. But the reporting in, like, official reports doesn't go into the psychology, into the sociology, into the social fiber of things in Namibia. Now we just get this glossed over. Yeah, Dwight was beaten up. Dwight went to the hospital. Dwight is fine.
Yeah, so, you know.
We don't know why Dwight was
case,
beaten
up. Yeah, we don't know with what he was beaten.
We don't know what level of trauma Dwight sits with after being, even after being treated at the hospital. We don't know his level of trauma.
At least I want to believe we have this information, but, you know, it's the whole, okay, you know what?
What, Helmut? Why did you give up so quickly?
The lack of unified approach leads to duplication of efforts, inconsistent data reporting, and challenges in sharing critical information. That's from their report. That's because you have a lot of ministries that have all kinds of very important information that could have contributed to this report.
Mm.
But, you know, I don't know whether to say they didn't show up or they were not conducted or they are just doing their separate things. It's hard to classify. I mean, it's hard to categorize. But I think that would provide a lot of insights into addressing the root cause. Because, this is a very wonderful report. You know, I would actually say to the Ministry of, of Gender, Gender Equality, the very same thing that we said.
Gender Equality. Yeah,
Child
Equality.
Welfare. The thing is, I would say the same thing to those guys, the very same thing that we said to, to Ombudsman about the NAMRA report. Yeah, just keep the report coming because they are awesome with regards to knowing what's going. But the one for Ombudsman or NAMRA now, that one was, that's a piece of literature, spot on.
Yeah, but they need to do this with all SOEs.
Exactly. All they just have to do is keep the reporting level is top notch. Keep it up, except expand it into.
You should leave President Pumba's label alone.
You should
drop that top notch.
I mean, it's my favorite president. Look, now. You know, instant porridge, though it was in terms of length, but you know, but
did he use such a sentence
of
instant porridge?
No, that's just mine. I decided to add on his top notch.
Oh, yeah.
Now, the thing is, the Ministry of Gender, on the other hand, this is an awesome report, except it's very rudimentary. In terms of information that it provides in with regards to the to the problems that it seeks to address.
Yeah.
That's because you have a bunch of ministries that you can imagine are sitting with all kinds of information that would have been relevant to this report.
Yeah.
And it's not there.
It's not there. I mean,
and
the police can make their own, and it would be an outstanding visualization, even just in text format, of the Namibian society. But before we end, as we end, guys, see you on Monday. See you on Sunday. From my side.
Oh yeah, Sunday also.
Yeah. On that note, see you. Enjoy the rest of your evening in our company, guys.